Heard about Anchor? It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today. We're hitting a milestone today, folks. This is episode number 160 of YWC Football Talk. As always, sponsored by BetStamp. For the best odds, shop for odds on BetStamp, Ontario, April 4th. Look out. Well, anyway, guys, look, the NFL is just the greatest reality show on TV. We got a lot to cover. We got broadcasting news. We've got player trades. We've got new faces and new places. And what better way, like, I feel like every time there's big news surrounding his team lately, Big Rat's here. Look, he was here when Mike McDaniel got hired. Now, yesterday there was a series of tweets that go out saying Tyreek Hill wants to get traded to, it's between the Dolphins and the Jets. Ultimately, Tyreek chose to go to Miami. And what better way to cover this and kind of like sorrow my pain than with Big Rat himself, Big Rat 310, noted Dolphin fan extraordinaire of YWC Football Talk.
Got the jacket on, got the logo.
Is that the salute to service one or is that just a regular?
I think this is a salute to service one, but I wouldn't know for sure.
Oh,
but yeah. Either way.
If it's an American flag backwards, it's salute to service.
Oh, no, I don't think it's this one then.
Yeah, okay. I guess the green kind of threw me off because those are the usual salute to service colors.
Yeah, and the color scheme is similar to those jackets. So, yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, my team has been incredibly relevant over the past few months. Like, Deshaun Watson trades last season.
Yeah.
The Brian Flores stuff, which was its own story. And I also came on the podcast shortly after that lawsuit dropped.
Yes.
And now, obviously, what's happened the last 2 days, like, I'm so used to everyone saying my team is boring and there's nothing interesting about them and we're not getting covered, like during the Tannehill years where we would just never get talked about. And now it's like they can't get themselves out of the news cycle the past 6 months. It's crazy.
Yeah, but like it's for the good this time, though, I feel like. And look, this is coming from a division rival. Like, it's one of those things that's for the good. But you keep seeing different angles of it, of, like, how Miami, like, you see how I've seen Bills Twitter kind of going, like, if Tua thinks he's getting a shootout with Josh Allen, good luck. I've seen, look, the Patriots are down bad, and then the Jets are kind of just the Jets, you know, where it's kind of like they always get their hopes up. It's like, oh. But anyway, it's legitimately an – there is 9 to 10 teams who can legitimately make good cases and make in the playoffs, and only 7 of those teams are going to get in.
Yeah, almost certainly there's no way around it because, like, this offseason as a whole, you know, it's been pretty crazy. Everyone's loading up. The only inevitable conclusion from this is one of the quote-unquote super teams or whatever is going to have a really disappointing season. Like, there's going to be – like, whether it be, like, the Browns, like, if Watson gets suspended for 8 games and they only go 7 and 10, right? Like, something like that. Or the Chargers having, like, a very serious injury, which is very Chargers-esque, as we know.
Yes.
And they only go 8-9. Like, that's going to happen to one of these teams. And, like, whether it be the Raiders or the Chiefs or the Broncos or the Colts, one of these teams that are my team, obviously, like, one of these teams that made these big moves is going to have a really disappointing year. And that's going to be, like, that's the only way I think this is going to make sense.
Well, that's just the NFL as a whole. You always have the teams that are disappointing. Like, last year was the NFC West. You know, everyone was like, hey, Seattle could be good. That's a take Danny and I stood by them missing the playoffs. We both got correct in August. You had Arizona, San Francisco, we didn't know about. And then the Rams, everyone was like, okay, Matt Stafford. My thing with Miami is right now, look, I think it's a good signing for you guys. I think more than ever now, this is the make it or break it year for Tua. You know how last year was Baker where it was like, okay, year 3, let's see what he's going to do. Year 4, last year was year 4, my apologies. But you know how, like, a lot of guys, like, I'm going to say Daniel Jones, but obviously I know, look, you and I have a special connection with Daniel Jones. We still get to watch his primetime games. None of those are announced. But I'm just saying how, like, year 3 is a big year for a lot of these quarterbacks. Like, in his case, Giants fans wanted to see him progress. They surrounded him with talent. I think with Tua now, it's the same sort of thing where you need to see progression from Tua. You need to see him make those deep plays, those deep bombs. Because if not, that's when the whole, you know, quarterback carousel is going to start spinning again. And I feel like the Miami media is truly, truly going to pick up on, hey, do we need to get a change? Do we need to make a trade? Obviously, look, you had Danny sparking the, let's start the Kyler Murray to Miami rumors, which I still think the Arizona Cardinals will get an extension done sometime before training camp. But with Miami, that's just how I feel, is look, for Tua, this is a show up or show out. This is a show up or get out kind of year.
Yeah. It's a big year for Tua. Yep. That goes without saying. I think more important than actually playing well, I think it's going to be playing a full season.
Yeah.
Or at least something close to it. Like if he plays 16 games, I don't think anyone's going to care. But yeah, having to play close to a full season, I think is going to be a big part of this, because that's a big question mark on his career up to now. Even the most diehard Tua Dolphins fans would consent to that. Like, yeah, the injuries are a problem. So that is something that would need to be that he would need to prove. I think that's even more important than playing well, because if he only plays well for six games and then like tears his ACL and it's out for the year, that could be the end of him in Miami, even if those are six good starts, because the health then just becomes too much to overcome. So I think that's the first priority. And then, yes, I do agree. I will say, like, you know, people keep – like, I don't think the offensive line is fully fixed yet. Like, everyone's acting like it is because they got Teron Armstead and Connor Williams. I think that fixes the left side, but those guys got to stay healthy. Like,
yes. Connor Williams, that's been a problem in Dallas.
Exactly. And then also the penalty thing that he had last year, which, yes, as Dolphin Twitter, like, is incessantly pointing out, well, that was only last year. He didn't have as many holding penalties in 2019 and 2020. But last year is the most recent data that we have. So I don't think it's unreasonable to be concerned about it. And, yeah, like, if the Dolphins' offensive line is never healthy and it still is 29th in the league in pressures, like, then, yeah, that's not fully helping the offense and the receivers. And, you know, like, so, like, I need to see what happens. Like, Dolphin fans know this very well, unfortunately. 2018, Josh Sitton, who the Dolphins signed in free agency to be their starting left guard. And this was back what in that era of Dolphins' offensive line, they were really good at the tackles in the center, but not in the guard spots. They had Laremy Tunsil and Juwan James on the outside. And for years, they had Mike Pouncey in the center. And then that year, yes, it was Daniel Coleman. Yeah. And so the problem was the guards were always, like, historically terrible, like worst guards in the league. And that's why their offensive lines would still be bad, even with a bunch of first-round picks to tackle, because the guard play was just atrocious every single year. So
it overshadowed the good tackle play.
Exactly, because the penetration through the middle is harder to beat. And so when we signed Josh Sitton, everyone got excited. The first game against the Titans looks great. And I was there, and I was actually watching him specifically that day. He was mauling. He was getting to the second level. He was creating lanes. He was communicating very well with everyone on where to catch the stunts, where to catch the games. Like, he made a huge influence. And then he tore his biceps, and he was out for the year. And it's like all that trauma. Like, Dolphin fans are so traumatized, like, especially with Teron Armstead's injury history, should be noted. Has never played 16 games. Obviously, now you need to play 17. Every Dolphin fan is terrified of, like, what happened to Carl Lawson with the Jets last year. Like, we're just expecting that, like, for Teron Armstead. And then everyone's going to say, well, we said no excuses for Tua. And it's like, okay, but if he's out for the year, then the excuses come back a little bit. So we'll have to see how his health holds up. That's a big key to the season. It's going to be on offense. I would have to say whoever the right tackle is going to be, Tua's health and the health of the offensive line are the three keys that have to be hit in order for the offense to hit its potential. But yeah, I mean, after next year, he's eligible for an extension, and they have to make a decision on his fifth-year option. So yeah, this is the year, make or break.
Exactly, exactly. I agree with you. Look, too, with the offensive line. Look, you want to see also too. You hope that Austin Jackson can make a true third-year leap, because I know his play has been fairly weak. I'm pretty sure he's playing guard for most of last year, I believe, on the right side.
He was playing left tackle the first few weeks of the season. He was, and he, but he did play guard for most of the year because he was at left tackle weeks 1 through 5. He was so historically bad. Like, and he was like okay as a rookie, but for whatever reason, as a sophomore, he was. Maybe it's just the bad luck of defenses they were playing. You know, when they played the Bills, and the Bills had like a, for whatever reason, they perfectly knew what Tua's snap count would be each play because of the timing of the RPOs, and so their DNs would just crash off the edge, destroy the offensive line. Then they played the Raiders the next week. That's Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue. And then they played the Colts in their defensive line, and you had Darius Leonard coming up outside against Austin Jackson a lot. So he wasn't just bad. He was, like, so historically bad, they instantly moved him to left guard because they were so terrified that, like, the season would not be functional if he was at left tackle. That's how bad it was. But he was okay at guard, but now, obviously, left guard is probably going to be Connor Williams. So he's either going to have to move to the right side and play right tackle or right guard or be a backup. So the hope, I'm sure the front office is rooting for him to win a right tackle job in training camp or something. And then we'll have to see how he does on the right side and see if there's any progress.
Exactly, because if he does lose the job in training camp, it just looks like an even worse of a draft pick. You want him to succeed. If you're Chris Greer, you want the best from Austin Jackson in 2022.
Yeah, they just, they rightfully, you know, they can't deceive him on that. That's why they had to turn Armstead. Like, in a perfect world, you give him another chance to be the left tackle. You drafted him in the first round. That's what you wanted him to do. But you just, the season is so important for their quarterback situation. They just can't risk it. And that's why they had to give Armstead all that money. And like, look, they're fine with Ajax being on the offensive line, but they could not risk him being the left tackle again. So
we'll have to see how he exactly does. So that's why you bring in someone. That's why, for a lot of times, guys, like, that's like even why last year, look at what I know Kansas City drafted really well with Trey Smith and Creed Humphrey. That's the reason why Tyler Linderbaum's really high on people's draft. We'll get into, trust me, Big Rat's here tonight. He'll be back before the draft. Don't worry about that. And then Trey Smith would also do. That's why they went out and traded and gave up their first round pick for Orlando Brown, because they knew they needed help on the line. Paid the big bucks to get Joel Tooney. So it's the same sort of system with you guys and Teron Armstead and stuff. Like, I spoke to my dad, who's a Saints fan, as many of you know, and he basically knew, look, he wasn't going to get that money from the Saints. That's why he went somewhere else. Like, I got asked tonight, why did the Pats let Ted Karras walk? I thought he was good. Ted Karras last year, left guard, was playing really well. He just earned his payday, and he knew he was not going to get it from the Pats. That's why he went to the Bengals, because the Bengals had the money. And look, that's an attractive spot now with Lyle Collins, Alex Kappa, and now Ted Karras. That's a beefed up offensive line. And hopefully, too, they get a fourth-year jump from Jonah Williams.
Yeah, the Bengals did a really good job in that department. And I think fans, like, it's like, I think it can, and I think you would agree with me on this, it makes sense when franchises are in different places where they could prioritize things that other teams would not. So the Patriots, you know, rightfully, they've been, like, kind of tight with their dollar this year after how much they spent last year. And they're like, look, Ted, you're good, but, like, we're not in the place where we want to, like, overpay for you right now. The Bengals are a team where, well, like, if the offensive line is better, we might win the Super Bowl. So, like, we don't care if we overpay. And the Dolphins, like, one, it's reasonable to ask. The Saints are a good organization. They've had Armstead for 10 years. If they aren't going to give him that money, why should the Dolphins? The reason is because 2022 is so important for the Dolphins' future. Like, they overweight the next year than they do down the line because they need to get certainty at quarterback. And also, Chris Greer's job might be on the line. So they're going to weigh 2022 more than other teams are. So they'll pay more for Teron Armstead. They'll pay more for Tyreek Hill. That doesn't mean the Saints are in the wrong or the Patriots are in the wrong. It's just all these four teams are in different places. And when you're in a different place as a franchise, you make different financial decisions.
Exactly. Like the Saints and the Patriots, you could argue are in that. I hate that we're in this place, but they're both in that. Sorry, my phone's going off. Oh, my Apple Watch, excuse me. Both of them are in that purgatory. You know, Saints, Patriots, both teams. And I will say this, even though I'm not the team that much, I'm not counting the Patriots out of being in the playoff mix. I think they have a very good chance to catch a wild card spot. I know it's March 24th, but I'm conceding now. The Bills will probably win the East. It'll be between, I think, you and I for second and third. And then, look, I'm not bullish on Zach. I just still think he really needs to take that leap before I truly, truly buy in. You know, where it's like, I've seen the car get test driven. Now you want to, like, maybe take it for a second test driver. Like, you really want to think about committing to it before you buy the car. That's me with Zach Wilson. But the other thing I was going to do is you have Dolphins who are in a prove it year. We got to make the playoffs. But then you have the Bengals. Yeah, you know what? They got a window to win. They're going now. That's why even the Chargers. Chargers went out, gave all that money to J.C. Jackson, traded for Khalil Mack. Trying to think. Oh, also, that's why they paid Mike Williams as well. And Tom Telesco finally, or the Spanos family finally let Tom Telesco spend the money. So it's like different teams in different positions. Even though I still say that Chargers aren't in a – I don't know if they're in a win-now position, but I feel like they're in a, look, we got to make the playoffs and we really have to, you know, show improvements on last year.
Yeah, because I think the Chargers, like, you know, the Chiefs, they're paying their quarterback a lot of money. The Dolphins are not paying their quarterback a lot of money. The Chargers are not paying their quarterback a lot of money. So they can afford to, in the Dolphins' case, overpay for Tyreek Hill. In the Chargers' case, overpay for Khalil Mack. In terms of not that it was a bad trade, it was a good trade, just in the sense of maybe his dollar value does not match his current production at this point in his career. That's all. Not
exactly.
Not because he's a bad player or anything like that. So, yeah, like when you're not paying your quarterback, it makes things easier. And the Chargers, I mean, we've been watching football long enough. You know, if they don't make the playoffs, like for all the praise that Herbert gets, if they don't make the playoffs again, all of a sudden, I think not that Brandon Staley would get fired, but I could definitely see a scenario where if they don't make the playoffs again, Staley is the one on the hot seat entering 2023. And, you know, like that's that kind of things all of a sudden get dicey because, like, when you have a quarterback that good, the expectations are higher.
Exactly. And, like, what was at the surprises? Look, I tweeted earlier today, new podcast tonight, YouTube tag. Look who's here. Nightmare Ball, Markeem. Markeem is back. The three of us were on before.
I almost didn't make it.
I saw you didn't read it. I'm like, did this guy fall asleep or something? Or did he go out? Or what's going on? But no, he's here now, and it's all good, and we're here just talking football, man. So this is the beauty of the offseason for as much as, look, we still got
the
6 months.
The kid's background looks like he's a college football coach with, like, trophies and shit on the back. He looks like Nick Saban during those conference calls.
He's in the spirit of the pro days, man. The spirit of pro days.
In an alternative life, those could have been my accolades, like for my Buckus Award winning linebacker performance. And stuff like unfortunately, it's just a bunch of debate trophies.
Still trophies. Still trophies.
Trophies, man.
Yeah. But no, this, even this offseason, I know I want to go to a different subject now just because Markeem's
cut down his TV. Hold on.
All good. All good. I'm gonna wait. Oh, let's see. So you got it. All right, there we go.
All right, the tournament's happening, so I'm sorry about that.
No problem. I got my money on Texas Tech for later tonight.
What?
Yeah, I'm not afraid to admit that. Plus one.
Markeem, are my Canes gonna win tomorrow? I think they are.
Hey, I think y'all going to the Final Four.
Wow, we're that. I mean, we look incredible. Like
I think.
Busted my bracket. Your Canes busted my bracket.
They got the best possible road to the Final Four because of the matchups. It's all about matchups.
Yeah.
Like I don't think we beat the winner of this game. I don't think it matters. But like, I think we win tonight. I mean, come on, man. Yeah. Come on.
matchups dictate it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because
like you guys play ugly, and that's not a knock. It just is what it is, and like playing a bunch of finesse teams all the way to the final is bullshit. It's bullshit, but okay, whatever. It's whatever, man. we get the hardest road, and you okay? Cool.
Wait, you're Virginia Tech, aren't you?
Dude. Not in basketball.
Oh, okay.
I'm a Blue Devil fan with basketball.
Oh, that's the what for. I'm sorry. There's just something about
you bet against this team.
But what were y'all talking about? It's not a tournament show.
Okay, so let's get off the tournament. Get back to football. Even though it is tournament time right now, even though Gonzaga is currently playing Arkansas and Nova's playing in Michigan, the next piece I wanted to get to is something we actually talked about a month ago. The last time it was the three of us, and it was at the time of the whole, you know, Matt Stafford, is he a Hall of Famer, is he not debate. But if we said, if Matt Stafford's in, Matt Ryan sure as hell is getting in. And Matt Ryan now is an Indianapolis Colt, which I know I'm not the biggest Colt fan in the world, especially too because of the Pats Colts, like if you want to call it rivalry. But I honestly love that Chris Ballard did this trade because I think there's a chance that we can see Matt Ryan, not MVP Matt Ryan, but you can see behind a great running back, a stellar offensive line, maybe get him a couple more receivers, get him another tight end. I like Mo Alie-Cox, but I still feel like he's not – Mo Alie-Cox isn't like upper echelon tight end. You want to get him someone who could potentially be that. But I think that there's a very good chance the Colts can run away with this division this year. I'm not saying they're going to completely run away with it. It's going to be theirs all season. But I think this is a team that you can fully trust. And I feel like they are now where we thought they were going to be last year with Carson Wentz.
I think that in terms of talent, they're the best team in the division.
Oh, 100%.
I think that – the upgrade that Ryan gives them is being someone who has kind of done it. I know it's cliche to say it, but it's true. He's done it before. He knows what it takes to win games consistently because he used to, regardless of how I feel about him. I just think that people that believe he, because I know a lot of people are like, he's going to be back to Pro Bowl and all those. I think a lot of it had to do with him physically also, and I think that's gone. But his mind, you know what I mean, will get them. He won't lose them the amount of games that Carson Wentz lost them. You know what I mean? It won't be the same. So yeah, like talent wise, yeah, they were the best team in the division last year, talent wise.
They had the most Pro Bowlers in the league, I think. The Indianapolis Colts, a team that didn't even make the playoffs. I don't want to say lazy, but like the argument that everyone makes that's very cliche is Brady switched teams, Stafford switched teams. This could be, you know, very similar situation, like really loaded roster, held back a little bit by its quarterback. Like, is this the next one to win the Super Bowl like those guys did? Just because it happened the last two off seasons in a row doesn't mean it's guaranteed to happen again. But they should at least make the playoffs. They've made the playoffs 3 out of the 4 years Reich has been there. And yeah, I agree with Markeem. He's like, his mobility is shot. Not that it was ever that good. I recognize it. But now it's like particularly bad. Like, if
the arm's cooked too. His arm is cooked.
Yeah.
Exactly. But hey, Philip Rivers' arm was cooked too. He was just so mentally advanced when he was in Indianapolis. He could like just always know where to throw the ball. Even if he gave the DBs like any edge whatsoever, they would obviously get in the way. But he just mentally knew where to go very, very quickly.
And they also had the Bills on the ropes, remember, in that wild card game. I don't mean to cut you off, but they almost beat Buffalo.
Yeah, they outplayed them.
They did.
To be honest.
They just made a couple dumb mistakes. Like, there was a fourth down where they went for it when they should have kicked the field goal, and then they ended up biting them. Because I think if they had made that field goal and the score had stayed the same, they would have gone to overtime.
Yeah, and they had some bad fumbles, too. They were bad in some high-leverage moments in that game. Like, fourth downs, third downs, fourth quarters, just making bad mistakes at the wrong time. But they generally outplayed the Bills most of the game. Frank Reich said as much, too, after the game. He said watching the tape would be very, very hard because it was one they let get away. So, yeah, they're a good team. I think they're
I wish he was still the Eagles coach. That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. We kept the wrong fool.
You couldn't have looked at Barnett.
Now we got another fool.
You couldn't have known at the time that
I told you that, kid. I was like, we should have kept Reich.
Yeah, but I mean, Peterson had just won a Super Bowl. What are you going to do? Fire the Super Bowl winning head coach?
That's right. That's right.
That's like why Howie keeps getting extended in Philly, too.
Well, yeah, you're right. You're right about that.
Yeah, that's what the other Eagle fans, it's the rings. The ring's going to have him. That's like a save thing forever where he can just go, oh, yeah, right. I won your city a Super Bowl.
You got a point there. And Reich will claim just as much credit for the ring, but yes, nonetheless. Yeah. The one thing I'll say
he deserves 90% of the credit.
Yes.
For that.
You didn't even end up keeping Peterson that much longer. It's not like Mike McCarthy with the Packers, where he stayed on like 5 years too long because of all the credit from the Super Bowl. This one at least you got away from it pretty quickly.
That is true.
Yeah. My one thing on the Colts was just gonna be, I do think there's this perception that their offensive line is like elite. I think they need to do some work there because they lost Eric Fisher. They lost Mark Lewinsky. Like, they have a great guard and they have a really, and like Braden Smith and Ryan Kelly are fine, but Kelly has some injury problems that he's had over the last few years.
I think his knees are really messed up, but what offensive lineman isn't?
Exactly. Well, and so the point mainly is, for all the stuff Markeem was saying, at this point in Matt Ryan's career, like, that protection needs to be really strong.
Yep.
And so I think they need to do some work, whether it's drafting someone, whether it's getting Dwayne Brown, if he hasn't officially signed with the Panthers. I don't know.
I don't think he has.
Yeah. So, like, doing something like that. They still need to do a few moves like that, I think, to shore up that O-line. But otherwise, they'll be in a good spot to make the playoffs and maybe win a playoff game.
Exactly. Like, I'm not out here saying they're going to win a Super Bowl.
Zag is only down by four now, yeah.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Like, I'm not out here saying, you know what, oh, the Colts are going to win a Super Bowl, like, dark horse, all this stuff. No. I think they're that team, like – Cleveland was 2 years ago. You know what? Maybe, hey,
why can't they be a dark horse, though?
They can be. I think they just need, like, I think they need to add a couple more receiving weapons. Like, look, I expect our favorite receiver from YWC Football Talk, Michael Pittman Jr., he's like, that might be a good connection. Because remember, Michael Pittman was finally starting to show flashes last year of what he can be, what he was at USC. And then the other thing, too, is, look, they just lost Jack Doyle to retirement as well. And Mo Alie-Cox, he's good, but he's not great. I think if you can bring in another tight end and then maybe add a receiver in the draft, not even in the first round, if you can get a guy like later on, like the Lions did with St. Brown, that can help and go a long way too.
And I think one of the lessons from the Super Bowl, we've talked about on the show before too, is that usually you need two guys in today's NFL.
Yes.
Like, you saw that with the Bengals and with the Rams. Like, adding OBJ for the Rams was such a big deal, especially after they lost Robert Woods. So, because you don't want – like, it's just so easy for defenses to either shade their coverage or double someone, et cetera. You need two guys to win. So, you would want them to have another reliable option. You don't want Mo Alie-Cox to be the second most important receiving weapon in the offense. I think that would be an issue.
That's why I think the Chiefs will be around 500 all year this year.
Oh, spicy.
That's my hot take.
You know, the Chiefs thing – Mahomes is – that's why I think this year is such – and I know, Big Rat, we hate them. I think if Buffalo doesn't win this year, it's going to be really hard for them.
Absolutely. There's no excuses.
Allen's contract kicks in next year.
No fucking excuse. They need to at least get there. They need to get – if they don't – I don't want to hear about this team if they don't get to the Super Bowl. It is set up for them to get there. They should have the best record in football and make the fucking Super Bowl this year. It's set up for y'all to do this.
For them to do this. I ain't
Buffalo. Well, yeah, with them, yeah.
And them. Don't associate me with them. I live close to there.
As soon as I saw that trade, I was like, the Bills better make the Super Bowl.
What, the Von Miller signing, or is there a different – what trade?
No, the Tyreek Hill trade.
Oh, the Tyreek Hill trade. Right. Yeah, because, like, I was on here the other day.
The Von – let's talk about – yeah, you just signed Von Miller, who is obviously
six-year
not –
six-year deal,
know.
And he's turning 33, I think, today or tomorrow.
Yeah, but we know, like –
it's
know,
a three-year
like,
deal, realistically.
Yeah, but there's fake money on that six-year, $120 million contract.
It's like the Taysom Hill deal that he signed last year, that four-year, $140 million deal.
Yeah,
but no, I still think that with Buffalo, though, where, look, I know they whooped our ass in the playoffs, but their season was viewed as a disappointment because they lost to Kansas City in the divisional round when they were Super Bowl or bust. I'm hammering the table on this now. That's my take. If they do not win the Super Bowl, it's going to be very, very hard for them to get back. Because, look, Allen's contract's kicking in. Mahomes' cap hit was $7 million this year. It's going to be 30, I think 36 or 37 this year, 38 next year. That's why decisions like this had to be made. And that's why, and I'm going to toot my own horn, the Patriots dynasty is always going to be remembered for being great because of Tom never taking big money.
Yeah, and Belichick getting out from those contracts before they kicked in every time. He did it every time. But rare, you know, sometimes he kept certain guys, but for the most part, he's like, oh, we'll find somebody else. It's okay.
Remember, he dumped Lawyer Malloy for nothing when he was a team captain the year before because Rodney Harrison impressed him in training camp.
He was the best safety in football. He was like, get out of here.
And I saw like Greg, like your boy, Greg Bedard. I was reading one of his, like, to Mark King's point, like part of their success is the financial competency. Like they would never, like they also never gave Asante Samuel another big contract at the end of his Patriots tenure. Same with Chandler Jones. Same with, I mean, Collins, they got rid of very quickly, who ended up not warranting a big money deal, but people thought so at the time.
Trey Flowers too, right now. Who could probably come back?
It was like right with the except, like one of the only exceptions was Devin McCourty. That was the guy he would not let walk. Famously, like on the phone, like offered him another contract. But yeah, they were usually good about that.
There are certain guys. I'm going to say that quickly. There are certain guys who are just built to built the mold of the Patriot way. Devin McCourty's one. David Andrews. I know Dante Hightower's probably on his way out the door. I don't expect him back. He's getting older. He's been having some injury issues. Matthew Slater too. There's certain guys where, look, when you think Patriot way, you think of those players, and that's where Devin McCourty comes to mind. Like Devin McCourty took a nothing deal to stay. He signed another 1 year deal. I think it's up to $9 million that he can make this year. So it's not one of those things. Like, what was I going to say? It's not one of those things where they're looking for big money. It's just one of those things where they buy into the Patriot way and they're buying what Belichick's preaching. Yeah, but no, that's my big thing with Buffalo. But with Kansas City, I'll say this. I like the Juju signing before Hill left. I like that signing just because, you know what, he can be that check down guy. Like, you know, maybe be a flex fantasy player, bench fantasy player. But yeah, like, let's talk AFC West. Let's talk AFC West. Who's the best team in that division right now?
You tell me Russell Wilson's healthy. I don't know.
I don't know if you guys saw this. Can I actually control for a second? I don't know if you guys saw this today, but their stadium caught on fire.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, if you go to Denver Fire Department on Twitter, like there was a few rows and like a couple boxes that got burnt out.
Oh, that's a bad omen. Then never mind. Forget what I was saying.
I just like look. Maybe this is kind of like dumb because I'm relying on history instead of modern day. There is part of me that just like can't bring myself to expect the Chargers to do well because I just remember for much of Philip Rivers' second act, it felt like we would do this every summer. Like the Chargers like look really good on paper, then the injuries would happen or like the weird coaching decisions and
they find stupid ways to lose games.
It's just like
that's still the case.
It is.
It's still the case.
They're like for all the hype they got early last season and that Brandon Staley got early last season, I mean, ultimately it should be viewed as a disappointment. Like I think Dan Wetzel from Yahoo said that Brandon Staley, in his opinion, did the second worst job of all the new coaches aside from Urban Meyer. Not that they were close. Obviously, Urban was way worse.
That's historic.
Yeah, historically bad. But aside from Urban, like, he picked Staley as the one who did the second worst job, because all these – like, Dan Campbell's inheriting a totally rebuilding team. They were feisty. They were competitive. You don't hold that against them. You know, Nick Sirianni made the playoffs. I know Markeem still thinks he's a goof, but nonetheless, like, with Staley, it just seemed like they had so many bad losses that could have been avoided that they would just, like, collapse, like that Texans game where they just collapsed. The first Broncos game where they're turning the ball over. And obviously the way the season closed out, it's like, you know, I just wonder, like, are they going to lose games in stupid ways again and not meet the expectations that are being levied upon them now?
So I think they went the whole year without a signature win.
Yeah, usually.
Yeah.
With the exception – I guess when they beat the Chiefs, but that was it, and that was early. That was early.
They got their asses kicked. That's when the Chiefs were struggling.
Yeah. That's the thing.
But remember, there was one game against the Ravens, and the Ravens absolutely walked them.
Yeah.
And then they had that one shootout game with Cleveland. I'm trying to remember if they won that game or not.
They did. But Cleveland, yeah. that didn't end up meaning what we thought it did. God, that was when we thought the Browns were better than they actually were.
Yeah.
They used whenever they faced, like, the really good teams, they usually lost. And they usually lost pretty solidly. So I think Denver's got a better roster, personally. I think they were just weaker at quarterback, so I would pick them.
Tell me Russell Wilson's healthy. Yeah.
They're also too – y'all know how I feel about Fangio and Locke. Big Rat knows this for almost 3 years now, how I felt about
early.
Those.
You were early.
Very early. I will say this, though. I think they may regret giving up Noah Fant in that deal. That's the only thing I'll say. But I like Sutton. Tim Patrick's really good. Judy. I want to see if Jerry Jeudy, but the one guy I'm really looking at to see if he can bounce back and be healthy and kind of be that slot guy is KJ Hamler.
Yeah.
Had a solid rookie year. Their running game's good. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Russ is already working with some of the weapons. One important thing that I think he's doing is he's working with his center, Lloyd Cushenberry, already, which I think is something that's very, very big to get not just communication with, like, your offensive line as a whole, but especially your center.
It is. Can we just stop? It is so weird that he's not a Seahawk anymore.
Yeah.
That's so weird. That's so odd, man. It's so weird.
Much like when Peyton joined the Broncos in the very first game we saw him in the jersey. And
it's weird. Same thing with Brady and the Bucks.
Yeah.
So weird.
It's going to look weird the first, because I presume he'll be on primetime pretty quickly. If not week one, like soon after, they'll get the Broncos on primetime. And yeah, like
probably the Seahawks on primetime.
It will look strange. It will look very, very strange when we see it for the first time. And the other thing in that offense, though, like, not just those receivers and him working with the O-line, but Javonte Williams, I'm a big fan of. Maybe it's because he absolutely murdered my Hurricanes. I've mentioned it before on this podcast. People can look it up. Him and Michael Carter combined rushed for over 700 yards against the Canes in 2020. 700 rushing yards from those two guys. And Javonte, I think we'll start looking at Javonte now that Melvin Gordon probably won't come back. We'll look at him next year the way people now are looking at all those backs in the class the year before, like the DeAndre Swifts, the Jonathan Taylors. Maybe I'm not saying he's as good as Taylor, but I think he can be in that tier of, like, the next, like, young stud backs that we'll see pretty soon.
Taylor, by the way, is my RB1 for fantasy for this year already. I know it's only March, but if I had the first overall pick, I'd probably go him just because he's reliable, and I'm done with Christian McCaffrey for fantasy football. With the Broncos,
he can't stay on the field.
He derailed my. In my league, I traded up to get the first overall pick, which I never do. But this year, I remember at the time, I think McCaffrey is uniquely more valuable than the other top running backs this year because of all the ways he's used on offense.
Yeah.
And I traded up. I actually swapped draft picks in a later round, and it just destroyed my season. So yeah, never again.
I knew this would happen to McCaffrey, though, man. Like, he got beat up so much when he was young, and then he came in, he was really good. I was like, man, how long is this going to last? And now he can't stay on the field.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing with Denver, too, is I want to see what Patrick Surtain does in his second year. He was a very, very underappreciated rookie defender in his first year. Just, I feel like Michael Parsons was too much of the hype.
Yeah.
But Surtain showed a lot of promise.
He did. And ball skills, too. Wasn't just good in coverage, but making the big plays, getting the interceptions. Like, he's a talent.
Yeah, exactly. They also do some talent in the linebacker. If Bradley Chubb can stay healthy, that's a big one, too, because Chubb's been having some injury issues.
That team has no real weakness, man.
No.
if you really think about it.
The one team I don't know why I'm kind of bullish on still is Vegas. I don't know why.
Well, I mean, it's like, fair to – they just got Adams. They already had good receivers. Like, they were kind of missing exactly him. Like, he unlocked – now it all makes sense. It's like now you have Renfrow in his spot. You have Waller in his spot. Now that you have that dominant number one alpha that they kind of wanted Bryan Edwards to be, or what Zay Jones was at times, now Adams kind of complements the rest of the wide receiver core. It all looks very nice. And, you know, they have
– coaching, man. Coaching.
Yeah.
That's my thing, man. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I know, but in the NFL, that matters, man. Like, coaching, it's so important in the league. It's so important.
That's why I'm bullish on them. I know McDaniels and Ziegler have come in from New England. They've brought a shitload of Patriots and they've been trying to recruit so many former or current Patriots to go there.
They signed Daron Harmon today.
Yeah, they signed, exactly, longtime Patriot. Yeah. Then he went to Detroit and Atlanta. Now he's in Vegas. Jakob Johnson, Brandon Bolden. There's others that are just escaping my head right now. But for me with them, I think it's ultimately going to be how Derek Carr plays. I think if we can see – I don't think we're going to get 2016 Derek Carr, but if we can get to something close, this team will make the playoffs. I think if not, who knows? But also, here's the other thing. I think it's going to come down to their offensive line.
And I think I've been a longtime Carr skeptic on this podcast. I thought – hey, I will say – he played well last year. He genuinely played very well. Now, my concern is you give him a big extension, which is what everyone says they're going to do because they just extended Adams and they're supposed to be like a package deal.
Crosby also just got a huge extension.
Is this going to be like, I mean, in 2016, Carr played very well. He got the 4-year, 100.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah,
and then the next few years, his play tailed off. So I wonder, like, is there going to be – was that just contract year Derek Carr, or is that something we're going to see year after year after year after year? And it's a good team on paper. They went through a lot of adversity. I do think – this is kind of a fucked up thing to say, but, like, all the shit they went through with Gruden and Henry Ruggs, it almost, like, created, like, this rallying cry for the team. They genuinely became a mentally tough team, like, going through all that. Like,
that's usually what happens.
Yeah. Like,
like that happens. Either you get tougher or you crumble.
Exactly.
And they grew and they rose above it. And they deserve a lot of credit for that. But it's just hard, Griff, because the rest of the teams in the division got better, with the exception of the Chiefs, but the Chiefs destroyed them last year.
Yeah.
And the other problem is they last year got a little lucky in some of their games. Like they deserve to make the playoffs, but they were one of those teams, like the Browns the year before, making the playoffs with a negative point differential. My Dolphins are experts in that. And whenever they do that, they take a step back the next year. The Browns did it in 2020, took a step back the next year. So that's my concern.
Did you ever talk about Watson? I missed that show.
We have not talked about that yet. I did record on Monday with from Sportsnet up here in Canada, Andy McNamara, who is a huge Browns fan. But the one thing I want to make quickly on I have a point to make, and I don't know how messed up this is, but imagine how good that roster would be with Henry Ruggs. If you have Adams, Ruggs, Waller, Renfrow, like that's insane. That's nearly comparable to what Tampa had in 2020. It's such a damn shame that such a tragedy happened and that his career is over.
Yeah,
and his life pretty much. I just wanted to bring up that point with Henry Ruggs. Just thinking about it's like what I think too about the what ifs. Like, what if Aaron Hernandez didn't kill Olden Lloyd? You know, it's a really dark place to go down to, but there are those what ifs you think about. Like,
you had some people that really thought that Aaron Hernandez was better than Gronk.
There was a lot of people in New England.
A lot of people felt that way. I mean, I thought they all were crazy, but a lot of people felt that way. He was really good, though.
He was good, but I was always on the side. Gronk was the better tight end. Like, the people right now, and I want to say it's about Kansas City. I think this year's going to be a big year for all the people out there who are saying that prime Travis Kelce is better than what prime Gronkowski was.
Wait, hold on.
Have you not seen this? People believing that. You know, people are saying that. I'm not kidding. There's people on Twitter who think that prime Kelce is better than prime Gronk.
We're going to kill Mark Hume on the podcast.
Yeah.
What? There's people that really feel this way?
Like, I think
really
it's mainly Chiefs homers, but there's a lot of people who I think that prime Kelce is better than prime Gronk, and those people are wrong.
That's insane. Prime Gronk. Maybe the best football player to ever live.
Certainly best tight end.
Oh man!
If he didn't get injured, if he didn't have all those injuries, he'd probably be the best tight end. He's probably going to be, but he's definitely going to be top three by the time he officially retires for tight ends.
Yeah, those people are nuts. Like,
he is the. I don't care. He is the greatest tight end to ever live.
Yeah, there's
people like him in his prime. No tight end has ever had average yards per catch, the amount of touchdowns, the impact, the offensive impact. Nobody's close. Nobody. And I've seen Sharp. I've seen Gates. I've seen Gonzalez. I've seen them all. No. It's like a tier. There's him, and then there's everyone else.
You know, Shannon Sharp, there's two. I just want to say something with him quickly, because obviously he's I know more of him now because of his television time, because I was still a kid when his NFL career was finishing. But with him, one of his favorite sound bites from on the field for me, unfortunately, comes in the game when they absolutely whoop the Patriots. When he calls the phone, he's like, call the National Guard. Yep. I was like, oh, this is hilarious. And I realized, I looked at the score of that game and realized, oh, geez, they kicked the Patriots' ass. And I'm like, I don't like that anymore. That and then the Ray Buchanan won in the Super Bowl when the two of them got into it.
Like if you throw in all of like Gronk's offensive numbers, add to the fact that he's one of the best blocking tight ends to ever live.
That too.
Add that in there too. Like, bro, it's not. Come on, man. What are we doing right now? I can't believe people
are saying this. I'm on. You know me. I'm a Gronk guy. I'm a Patriots fan. For fuck's sakes.
It's insane.
Continuing
the
trend of the whole like. That's why, like, everyone, all those people who say, well, Tom Brady never had that many receivers to throw to, despite the fact that he had Randy Moss. Like, you would rather have Gronk than literally every non-Randy Moss receiver over the last 20 years. Maybe even Randy Moss himself. Like, that's why that argument
Hold on. Calm down, kid. But, yeah, I get what you're saying.
I'll go back. Every non-Randy Moss receiver, you would rather just have Gronk instead.
Oh, speaking of receivers, with the whole Patriots and Belichick just letting guys go for nothing and then eventually they come back, Deion Branch is another one who's a Super Bowl MVP, mind you.
Yeah, I forgot about him.
Wes Walker, another one.
Who's the current wide receivers coach of the Miami Dolphins.
Hell yeah, baby. With Tyreek Hill. It's going to be awesome.
That's going to be something. But no, we can get into Watson. Look, I said this on Monday's show for those of you who listened to that one. I'm going to say this again today. I cannot label the Cleveland Browns contender status until we know what his suspensions are going to be. I know there's a lot of people out. I've had people message me, and I've seen people saying, like, oh, look, he didn't play last year. He got acquitted of all the legal stuff. Why is he being suspended? Look, Ben Roethlisberger got acquitted of his sexual assault charges, still to serve 6 games.
Zeke,
6 games. I think they truly learned their lesson from the Ray Rice debacle, from, you know, how they just, oh, 2 games, here you go, and then the video came out, and then that's when they really start getting firm with suspensions. I feel like with him, this has, and also to Antonio Brown was 8 games. I know there's a little more to that than the others. This has to be a 6 to 8 game suspension. And if Jacoby Brissett can come in, and Big Rat, you and I know what Jacoby Brissett's capable of. If he can lead them to say a 4-4 or like a 5-3 record, yeah, I'll give him a shot at the playoffs. But I'm saying he's going to get suspended for 8 games. Just throwing the number out there. But if they're 3-5 or 2-6, they're not making the playoffs in 2022, and they have to look the 2023 and ahead.
Deshaun Watson also hasn't played football in a year.
That's the other thing, too.
I think that's being undercovered. Absolutely.
It's a big deal. It's a huge trade. One of the biggest in league history. This man hasn't played football in a year. It's just that simple.
And not even, like, if this is different from quarterbacks like Dak Prescott 2 years ago, whatever, when he broke his foot, his ankle, like, in September and, like, didn't play the rest of the year. Dak Prescott still played 4 NFL games. Dak Prescott still played in all of training camp. Deshaun Watson was not throwing to his
receiver. Was chilling at home.
Yeah.
Probably raping more women. No, I'm joking. But he's chilling at home. He's guilty, by the way. He's guilty. But
yeah,
he was chilling at home.
Yeah.
While, you know, the season was going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we, like, by all means, none of these players are the same.
Can I talk for a sec?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
The fucking Arkansas won.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't know if you guys know that. I just, like, looked at my phone for the scores, and holy shit, I always knew it. I just want to say this right now. I know Zaga will never win a fucking title. Got to get to a better conference.
Markeem, was that a choke job by Mark Few and company, or did Arkansas is Arkansas really good? Like,
No. Again, like I said, styles make fights. You know what I mean? So, like, again, I knew this would be a problem for them. I thought they beat them, though. I thought they beat them and then beat us and make the Final Four.
You still think Arkansas beats you guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
Eric Wasserman.
I do think we win tonight, though. Again, celebrate for a couple days.
It cost Griff some money in his back pocket for betting Texas Tech.
Can I tell you something with that? Bet365 gives out free $10 bets every week. Like they do it for NBA and they did it for NCAA. So it's not costing me anything. It was a free bet.
Fuck. Damn. That sucks.
Yeah. Nova beat Michigan. But no,
Real quick. Yeah. I'm tired of Paolo Banchero not realizing how good he is. He plays like someone who doesn't believe they're as good as they actually are. That dude's incredible. Someone needs to just shake him like, man, you're the best player on this court.
I was going to say.
He's the anti-Zion, man. He really is.
Who'd they play? Who'd they play last round? It was
Duke, Michigan State.
Yeah, Michigan State.
That was a good game
until the last 2 minutes.
And he, to Markeem's point, in the last 2 minutes of that, and we'll get back to Watson, I promise. He made like that block on defense, and he made like that aggressive layup, like using his size on offense.
And that should be him all the time.
Yeah.
But he doesn't do that. You're physically bigger than all of these people.
So you're saying Zion would like believe in himself too much?
Yeah, Zion, when we lost, it was never because of Zion. You know what I mean? It was never because Zion is not feeling, because like I could rely on him to be him. You know what I mean? It would be other things that would happen. When we lose, it's literally because of Banchero. Like, brother, get into the game.
Hey, who's taking over for Coach K next year, by the way? Did they announce that yet?
Former player.
It's like one of his assistant buddies.
Kind of like how someone took the guy that took over for Roy
John, Williams. John Shire.
Yeah. Markeem
is frozen. Well, that's good to know. We'll see what happens with the rest of the tournament, though. It's March, folks, so if we're going to interrupt you with March Madness coverage, that's why. With Watson, I just want to get back to the point, too. Yeah, that's one of the biggest things with this whole thing. His last time playing football was New Year's, January 3rd, 2021.
Yeah. Like that. And
there's a bigger chance it's almost 2 years between games.
It is not the same comparison. I don't mean to imply it's the same level of talent, but if you look, most of those players who took the year off due to COVID, a lot of them came back and weren't the same. We're talking like Damian Williams, Albert Wilson, Hightower, like those guys. And I know Hightower was good early, but then kind of faded, obviously, down the stretch. Those are all like mid-level players. They're not the girl of Deshaun Watson, but these quarterbacks, like you're seeing Baker Mayfield getting throwing sessions in. With Cole Beasley, apparently, like yesterday and today, because he wants to keep being in rhythm. He wants to keep being in the timing of his passing game. And for Watson, who's hasn't thrown with many, if anybody, and now with the suspension too, and like Cam Newton, I'll just give a quick story on this. Cam Newton, when he did the interview for the I Am Athlete podcast and he missed those games due to COVID, he came back. And one thing he said when he came back that really gave him issues was that it felt like he's new season, new team, still learning everything, COVID offseason, the Patriot system notoriously complicated. He felt behind because every week of the NFL season, you like move forward and you're building off concepts from the prior weeks. He felt behind personally as the quarterback because there was some stuff in prior game plans that he didn't know as well as he wasn't playing. And like he really thought that really hurt his development. So for a quarterback to just miss 8 weeks and come back like in week 9, when your receivers and your tight ends and the game plan has changed a lot, and just to be thrown into that, I think that's not easy at all. And there's really no precedent of it. Like, Ben only got suspended for a few games. Or it was 6 games, right?
Yes, 6 games.
But Ben had been with that team before. This wasn't a brand new quarterback and a brand new team like this is right now. So, yeah, I think they are – and, like, the last thing I'll say on this is the comment of why should he get suspended because he missed last year – Andrew Brandt, like the guy who has the Sports of the NFL podcast, like used to be the cap guy for the Packers, good personality on Twitter. He's been adamant they will not count that as a legitimate suspension. He made $10 million. He willingly chose to not play for Houston. In theory, he could have decided to play for the Texans at any point. He was never on the commissioner's exempt list. That's not a suspension. That is him making that decision, and he was still getting a $10 million check. He is adamant that's not going to count as prior suspended games.
Should it.
Yeah,
it's a horrible PR look for the NFL too. If they just say, you know what, he missed all of last year, we're not going to suspend him. It's a horrible, horrible PR look for the league. So they're going to do it like Zeke too. I know there's a lot of backlash for Zeke getting suspended because it was like, oh look, nothing really happened. You still got to suspend him It's just the thing. You got to suspend them. That's the big thing.
It's 22 cases. Like, what are we doing here? Like,
he's guilty. Grand jury
coming out.
We're talking about a guilty man.
Remember, Schefter got raked with the coals for that tweet that he had, basically trying to make him seem like a choir boy and everything like that. When in reality, no, some of the stuff he was doing was just it was awful.
And yeah, and if any viewer here doubts what we're saying, like, just think of it like this. The criminal court is innocent until proven guilty. We know that.
Yes.
The civil court is not. The civil court is a preponderance of evidence standard, which means is there a greater than 50% chance based on the evidence that this happened? That is the threshold to determine punishment. The NFL is very similar. The NFL does not need to prove guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. The NFL just needs to convince themselves, is it more likely than not that something went down here? And very clearly you can do that in this case. So that justifies the suspension right there.
Like, it's very – I know this is very different subjects, but it's basically as soon as you said that, that's where it just – the words Deflategate just sparked in my mind where, look at that, where it got proved wrong and the NFL was so adamant about punishing the Patriots and Tom for that that eventually they went back, went through the – I believe it was the Supreme Court to get the Patriots to drop – the Patriots forfeited the first-round pick in 2016, and they made Tom serve a 4-game suspension. So the NFL, when they're committed to doing something or making sure that punishment gets laid down, they're going to lay down their law. They're going to do it. Like what I said before with the Ray Rice thing, how they completely botched that. I think that's them learning from their mistake.
Griff had to bring up Deflategate, huh?
Hey, look, it just sparked in my mind. It sparked in my mind. Think about it. When he said, when the NFL is a very similar thing, when they lock you in a room and they're basically you're just going to fry you until the truth comes out.
The NFL knows. They know that if they don't suspend him at all and they use the argument last year was enough, like, they know the tweets, the articles, you know, Calvin Ridley suspended for a year, nothing to Deshaun Watson. You know, like, so-and-so suspended 2 games for a failed drug test, nothing for Deshaun Watson. They will not take that PR hit.
It'll be such a double standard on the league, league too. But even still, the Calvin Ridley thing, I haven't really discussed it that much. For everyone saying, oh, it's too much time, like, why do you do this but not this? I just think with how big sports gambling is coming, you have to tell these guys, like, hey, Calvin, you want to go bet on the Atlanta Hawks? Be my guest. Do not bet on the NFL. You can bet on college. Like, I think it should be the thing where all the leagues do. Like, say, for example, baseball season starts in a couple weeks. They want to go bet on the NBA playoffs? Be my guest. Do not bet on MLB games. Because why? When you see stuff like this, and when you see players saying, I don't care about your parlays, or, oh, I didn't hit this just to screw your night over, like Kevin Durant for me last night. I don't even want to get into it. I had him make 2 threes. That was all I need. The fucker goes 1 for 7. But stuff like that, him coming out and saying that, it just causes collusion for the league, which I think if you don't suspend him and he's betting on it, it's just going to be actively deeper down that rabbit hole that, look, NFL games are rigged. And how we saw examples like how refs will not throw flags in the last 2 minutes of the game unless it's a Super Bowl. That's just what I wanted to say.
Yeah, these are the rules. Like,
yeah.
Like, follow the damn rules. Don't be an idiot. Like, even if, like, you don't think the actual – like, that's why I always, like, get into people who complain about drug suspensions and stuff like that. It's as much a test of your idiocy. Like, do not break company rules. It's not that hard. A lot of workplaces have that rule. So it's really, like, whether or not you care about the gambling thing at all, like, breaking a company rule should get you punished. But, yeah, the NFL –
That's how the real world works, man.
Yeah. And to be honest, like, I do think the punishment should have been harsh. I don't know. I'm not here to say that a year or 8 games, like, I have no idea. I can't compare those two things. But the NFL could not just give him a fine. The NFL cannot risk, with all the money they have tied up with DraftKings and FanDuel and their gambling partners, they cannot risk other players betting on games and creating that uncertainty with their league partners. That's going to cost the league a fuck ton of money. They had to come down hard. Now, maybe they could have come down hard with 8 games. I guess that's the generous argument from the other side here. But he had to be punished. And I think it's kind of ridiculous for anyone who thinks he didn't. Like, the NFL really had no choice in this matter.
Exactly. It's one of those things. It's the same thing, too. It's more than anything, it's the integrity of the game and protecting the shield at the end of the day. That's even the Deshaun Watson thing. Protecting the shield. There's another topic I wanted to bring up to you guys just to see where you guys are at with this. And it's... it has to do with not playing in a while, but all the Colin Kaepernick stuff that's coming up right now, where I know it's a very it could be a very touchy subject for a lot of people, and like you don't want to say the wrong words just because of the situation and how he left the league wasn't exactly, you know, it was a colorful situation. It wasn't the brightest situation. But do you actually buy into the fact that he could be a starting quarterback, or do you think it's just been too long to the point where it's been 6 years?
Not anymore. I used to feel that way, especially when you had guys like Mike Glennon getting contracts and shit like that. Right. But like now, it's like, nah, it's been too much time.
And I would say not as a starter. But what I will say is, can he still, you know, earn a roster spot? Yeah. And
absolutely. Yeah.
A good comparison for that is Josh Johnson, who was out of the NFL. I forget for exactly how long, but was out of the NFL for like 3 years or 4 years or something like that. He came back, and no, Josh Johnson can't be a starter, but Josh Johnson was a backup for the football team when they were the other name. He was a backup for them, came in, actually won a few games, and last year came in for the Jets off the bench, came in for the Ravens, played very well in both games, didn't win either game, but did play well as a quarterback, despite being out of the NFL for like 3 years or whatever. So,
hell, if Ryan Fitzpatrick could be a fucking seasoned veteran as long as he was, Colin Kaepernick should have a job in the league in some capacity. It's crazy.
A job, and the way things are in the NFL, like a job, and you'll probably see him play at some point. Like that's just how things work. Whether it's an injury, whether it's a benching, whatever it may be, you at some point see him come in and see what he can do. So
exactly. I know we lost Markeem for a second. I don't know what's going on there. He'll come back. That's my thing too. I know, look, if there's anyone to truly blame for – I'm just going to wait for him to come back here. If there's anyone to truly blame for why he wasn't signed –
That's crazy, y'all. Sorry about that.
It's all good. The one thing I was saying, Markeem, is if there's anyone to blame, though, for the fact why he hasn't been in the league, it's not – it's the owners. It's straight-up ownership because any GM could have gone and said, hey, we need to sign him. I still think that workout that he had in 2019, do you guys remember that, where he was at like a high school in Atlanta?
How can I forget that, Griff?
But then he wanted to go to another high school, and he said that they were like 32 teams are like 32 teams are there, like 32 can sign me. I still think it's been too long to where he can be a consistent starter, but you know what? I think I honestly can see a chance someone takes a flyer on him in training camp where he can go and improve it. But then I just don't want him to, you know, try to turn the tables and say like, oh, if it doesn't work out for him, like I'm not comparing it to Tebow because I still think that was just complete bullshit of him getting a tight end opportunity to be a tight end. But with him, I think it's just if he gets cut,
it has to be legit.
Yeah,
because you know what I mean. Yeah, it has to.
You can't cut him for the sake of cutting him.
Yeah,
and the rumor, to your point, the rumor is the Ravens in 2017 wanted to sign him, but Bisciotti and the other owners were like, nah, we don't want this.
There was another thing about that, too, is that Baltimore is close to Annapolis, which is where, obviously, the Navy is based out of as well. And that was another reason why I heard about it. Why? It was because the huge military connection that lays there within that area.
Yeah. And I think my team always has an argument for never signing him because he made those Castro comments, and that is just never going to be accepted.
You can't do that in Miami.
No.
You can't do that.
The Marlins fan base got Ozzie Guillen fired like after one season because all he said was he respected Castro's, not because he likes him as a person. He respected him because of the numerous assassination attempts that have been placed on his life and his ability to survive it all and still be a leader. Stupid thing to say, but he wasn't even saying he liked Castro, just that he respected his survival instincts, I guess. He got fired after a year as the Marlins general manager because of that. Like, it's just not acceptable. It's not acceptable down here.
Wasn't half the reason, like on another example too, with Daryl Moore getting fired after the backlash he got for supporting Hong Kong and then the NBA basically got like blacklisted in China?
Yeah, China took down, and by the Rockets had Yao Ming, like a huge Chinese superstar. And they blackballed the NBA from being shown on television, and they closed down the NBA merch store in response to those comments. It cost the NBA a lot of money. That one little tweet by Daryl Morey cost the NBA like $500 million.
Jesus. Which that's another topic I don't want to get into because I thought fun here. But no, but just back to the Kaepernick thing. If this was 2018, I could say, yeah, he's a starter. But like Deshaun Watson, he hasn't played a full season since 2016 to the point where it would be a great story. But I just think it's just one of those too little, too late things. And also, too, it looks kind of bad on the NFL, how we were saying before, where like, I think ownership is still going to be bullish to the idea of bringing him in, but I feel like eventually you'll have someone potentially step up and say, hey, you know what? Give him a chance. If he can't prove it, then fine. We can cut him, and then we'll just say, look, we wanted it to work. Unfortunately, it didn't work there. Because if you cut him just to cut him, it looks bad on you. It's the same thing, too. It's all bad. It could all be bad publicity, and that's something the NFL, I don't think, can really afford from any of its organizations.
And bad publicity? You think they care about that?
I don't think they
haven't cared for 60 years, Griff. They don't care about it.
You know what? Good thinking. They have not cared since the 60s about bad publicity. I'm just saying the league is its own. You know the backlash. Plus, to the – do you guys remember the silly comments Papa John made years ago when he basically blamed the kneeling? Yeah, people weren't buying my pizza because of, like, what was going on in the NFL and, like, the whole – because here's the thing, too, where
– no, they weren't buying it because it's inedible. It's trash. Yes.
Yeah. Horrible. That's the one thing I've never – they have, like, a few locations up here, but even the locations up here in Canada apparently are trash. If I'm going to the States for chain pizza, I'm getting something else.
And – The NFL, to kind of like reconcile what Griff and Markeem were saying, like they may not care about publicity in the fullest, but what they do care about is bad PR leads to sponsors pulling money. Like they care about money. And so like they have a financial relationship with the armed services and a lot of other forces there. And if viewership goes down, if people stop buying season tickets, like that's something the NFL cares about. So that is like the line they're trying to walk with this Kaepernick thing. Look, I mean, it's tough for Seattle because I think Seattle, like, they've been flirting
with
him.
They could use him.
They could
use him, man.
And the thing is, if they really believe in Drew Lock as a prospect, which, again, none of us do, but if they did, the problem is no one in their fan base is going to want Drew Lock to be the starter. Everyone is going to want Kaepernick to take over, and like, with good reason. And they may not want to do that because they may think it will create a toxic environment for Lock if they have any investment in him whatsoever.
They're going to give a year into Lock, and we're going to be on here saying, Seattle, don't do it. Seattle, you're going to suck. Seattle, we know what he's capable of. They'll do it, and then next year they'll be a lottery team again. It's just I know the lottery doesn't exist in the NFL, but you get
but
what
I mean. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, they'll be.
He said a lottery team.
Look, it's going to be like them and the New York Giants trying to vie for Bryce Young next year.
Stroud, my boy, CJ Stroud. Oops.
Yeah, who was throwing at the pro day today? I didn't get to see much of it just because that's the thing that sucks about working full time is that like I don't get to look at a lot.
Why do you not? What? Stroud sucks too. You're gonna tell me all my favorite college players are bad at football?
I think that every quarterback in this draft isn't good. All of them.
Is Stroud? Look.
Is he the best of the trash? I guess.
and he still has another year. So if he like plays well for another year, because. Yeah, I like Bryce, but Bryce is small. Bryce is 6'1", 194. Like,
yeah,
Stroud's got a little more oomph to him. I don't know if he has like we know this like all, these Ohio State quarterbacks seem to always get overrated because of all the skill talent they have. But you know, he forced Quinn Ewers to transfer. Doesn't that count for something? Ewers was like, "Oh fuck, I'm not going to get to play here," despite being the number one quarterback in the country.
Is he Texas Tech or did he go to Texas A&M?
Texas, I think.
I think he went to Texas.
Yeah, Longhorn Nation.
Hook him up. You know what the crazy thing about Ohio State last year was? Is that the fact that neither one of their – what I'm going to say right now, their best receiver still at that school.
Oh,
I agree.
Jackson,
I
agree. Kuba, yeah.
Kid's just lightning quick.
He had the most receiving yards of all of them.
He's only a freshman too.
Or a sophomore, I think.
Oh, so he'll be coming next year.
Hey, hot take outside from the lineman. I kind of think this draft is kind of trash.
Yeah, that's why I'm not mad at my team for giving up their draft picks. Because it seems like in this draft, you don't mind picking later because the differentiation between the top 15 and the second half of the 15 isn't that strong.
Like all of the skill players are just as good as one another. Like there's no real.
And there's a lot of them too. There's like seven receivers that people like eight. You know, it's just why take, even though I like Treylon Burks the most, why spend a top five pick on him when you can get a slightly worse receiver but still very strong in the second round? Like I don't get it.
Exactly. You have you have Drake London, who I think Garrett Wilson could be, but I wouldn't be shocked if Drake London's first off the board. So let's see, you have London, you have Wilson, you have Olave, you have Williams. Yeah. You have Burks. You have Dodson. You have
Mechie. How are you doing this off the top of the head?
You have Sky Moore. You've got the Christian Watson. Well, because nine right there.
Because it's all over NFL Twitter, like these, because of the combine. Like Christian Watson, who had like, what was it? The second best raw athletic score number behind Calvin Johnson.
Yeah.
There's two. There's a couple other guys who I'm looking at more. I want to look more into. One is I think his name's Alex something. I think it was with a P, the wide receiver out of Cincinnati. And obviously, look, I do not make the rules, but Slade Bolden somehow is going to be drafted by the Patriots and be like the next great slot receiver in the NFL. I don't make the rules. That's just how it goes for the Patriots. But Markeem, I agree with you. Like, look, offensive linemen, though, like, look at, I don't know if you saw the photo. They did a thing like where it's like Vince Wilfork, who's just, you know, big belly. And then you have like lean ass Evan O'Neill, who can just block the shit out of anyone. Who I'm still
like all these linemen, I think, are great on both sides of the ball. I think all of them are great.
It's a meat and potatoes draft. It's like you're not getting your dessert. You're getting your vegetables. You're getting your broccoli. It's like, I need my interior.
These are the big boys you'll see for the next decade.
Yeah. It's just not sexy. And really, we see this over the years. Like, when the quarterback class is bad, that's when people like, that's why people hate the 2013 draft so much, is because the quarterback class in that draft was so bad.
Yeah, but also, too, none of those guys are still, like, the best player from the top 10 was Lane Johnson. Besides that, like, half the guys from the top 10 aren't even in the NFL anymore.
To 2013. Who went first that draft? I'm trying to think.
I was Fisher.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
Luke Jokel went second.
Yeah.
John Jordan, my intelligent football team, decided to do that. But
I don't blame them, though. Yeah. I don't. He was a, you know what I'm saying, all-star on film. He's incredible on film.
Yeah.
Dean Milner to the New York Jets in that draft.
But the irony, though, of that draft, and that's probably what's going to be true for this draft as well. If you look in the 20s, there was some value in that draft. Like DeAndre Hopkins. I'm looking at it now. DeAndre Hopkins, Xavier Rhodes, Cordarrelle Patterson, Eric Reed for the Niners. Like, there's good Kyle Long for the Bears, who played guard for like 10 years. There's good players there. But the problem is, like, to Markeem's point, everyone was kind of the same.
And is he in Kansas City now?
What?
Didn't Kyle Long retire for a year, and now he's with Kansas City? Or he played last year with the Chiefs?
I don't know if he's coming back for 2022, but yes.
I'll look it up.
But you will probably get the same thing where, to Markeem's point, 1 through 32 is probably the same caliber of player. And so what's going to happen is the guys taken early are going to be viewed as disappointments because they're not going to reach that draft capital level. But then the guys taken at the back end of the first round who go to good teams and good situations, they're going to be the ones that we're going to say years from now, oh, those guys are all pretty good.
You know, I just looked it up, by the way. Kyle Long is a free agent at the moment, so I don't know if the Chiefs are bringing him back. But, you know, this – I'm going to keep plugging my own podcast because this is my show. Last Monday, I had on from Arizona Cardinals podcaster Alex Clancy on here from Locked On Cards. And he was saying to me what the Cardinals need to do this year is – or what Steve Kime does is he has dessert before he eats his vegetables when it comes to selecting talent, drafting players. I think this year that applies to all 32 teams. I've been saying this since like late last year. This draft is not something you get because you want it. You draft a player because you need him, because you want him to come in day one and make an immediate impact on your roster and in your locker room. That's what this year's draft is all about. You can draft flashy. It may bite you, but seeing this, you is the
plug
worst
holes with this draft.
Exactly. This is the glue guy kind of draft, you know. I know 2016 either wasn't flashy. Obviously, like Goff and Wentz, they're still in the league. But to say this draft's going to be like
barely.
Barely. Yeah, that's another story for another day. But what was I going to say? But this draft, though, I still feel like there's going to be a lot of guys here. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of busts. Yeah, there's always going to be guys who don't work out. But I think you're going to find, like, look, rounds 2, 3, 4, 5, I think you're going to find a lot of guys who are going to come in right away and surprise. And, you know, like, make differences on their rosters.
Yeah, guys that the example I'll give, which sounds like a bad example because he makes $20 million a year, but Byron Jones for the Dolphins, right? There's like a lot of consternation that like he's not worth his contract. But what the Byron Jones is when he's there, you don't have to worry about the position. Like the Dolphins do not have a cornerback need, like, which not a lot of teams in the NFL can say that. And we are thankful. Yeah, we paid a lot for it. But when you have guys, someone like Byron Jones, it's like he does just enough where you don't have to worry about it. Like people for years said this about Kelvin Beachum, very random example, I know, but when he was a tackle for the
Steelers, that is random.
when he was a tackle for the Steelers, and because like one of my favorite analysts, Chris Wessling, before he unfortunately passed away last year, he used to say Kelvin Beachum is undervalued by NFL teams because when he's your left tackle, you don't worry about the position. It doesn't matter that you're not getting flash. And so to the roster holes point in this draft, you're going to get a lot of guys where you just don't worry about the position anymore. Even if you have a defensive end that is not going to get you a 15 sack season, you never get the cornerback that gets you 10 interceptions in a year. You never get those instant flash playmakers, like the receiver who like goes for 1500 yards, but you'll probably get a 900 yard receiver. You'll probably get a defensive end that's good against the run and can get you like 7 sacks a year. You'll probably get a cornerback who's solid in coverage. You'll get a lot of guys that will make you not worry about the position anymore. And I think there's value in that.
This is another random example. I know I brought him up earlier, but this draft seems like a lot of Max Crosby's. You know, Max Crosby's not a guy where he's a top five.
You should just call this show random. Just say.
Oh, no. I have a different title for it. Because of the big news, obviously being Tyreek Hill going to the Dolphins. I was gonna do welcome to Miami. I can't say it to save my life. I don't know Spanish that well. But
bienvenidos a Miami.
Yes, that's what I'm calling this episode. That's what I'm calling this. But no, I just wanted to give that example because Max Crosby is another guy where, look, he's a good player and he's a good skilled position player at defensive end where, you know what, the Raiders don't have to worry about him, which it's kind of funny to think in that draft that they overshot for Cleveland Furl at number 4 and they got him, I think, in the
fourth round.
In the fourth round. So that's where I think you're going to find a lot of guys that are like that in this draft, you know. Guys who come up out of nowhere and unexpected. That's why when I see people posting what they think records are going to be for each team this year already, you can't do it this early. You have to wait until after the draft.
This is going
to
be the draft full of the hidden like legends. Like,
exactly.
We might have a Richard Sherman type deal in this draft or something like that. Who knows?
Part of what I still think is the greatest draft of all time, 2011. That or 1989, pick your poison. I want to move something different that we don't talk about all that often, but I feel like we should talk about today, and that's sports media news. I don't know if you guys have seen, but look, panels are changing. Amazon came out with theirs. I'm going to save Amazon for last. Because
RIP John Clayton. I don't know if you talked about it.
Yeah. I have not brought that up. Rest in peace, John Clayton. When you think of football and just football coverage, and also to a hilarious Sports Center commercial, John Clayton comes to mind. I feel like he's one of those guys.
Oh, that's my childhood, man. Like that's what I grew up on.
But even still, I feel like everyone who knew him did not have a single bad word to say about him.
Yeah.
He just seemed like a consummate pro. He knew the game. He loved the game. Something that that's why we're here. We all love this game. And rest in peace to a legend.
Yeah, I know Todd McShay, he posted something on his Twitter page that damn near brought me to tears, man. He was like, he said, I didn't know what I thought I knew until I sat down with John Clayton, and he taught me everything I know. So, yeah, man. Sad.
Jesus, sad. I didn't even to former guest of my podcast. I keep saying my podcast, but I don't think
it is, though. This is your show.
This is my
Poppy
show.
Collar Griff.
But no, recurring guest on the show. His name's Russell Baxter. I don't know if you guys have heard of him. He's worked in the NFL for years with various networks, and he worked with John, and he knew John closely, and that's where I got a lot of the whole senses of John seeming like the consummate pro, and even to a lot of guys who are new on the scene to their beats. Clayton was someone he would take young reporters under their wings and kind of, you know what, show them the way.
Yeah, he seems
sad, man.
Yeah. There's a new football company called Pro Football Network. You guys might have heard of them. They're based out of Miami. The two guys that started that company are both Dolphins fans. And in 2019, they wanted to see if, like, on a long shot, like, if John Clayton, like, was interested in joining the company. And they ultimately couldn't get a deal worked out. But John Clayton, like, took a meeting with them, met with them for, like, 3 hours, gave them tons of advice.
Oh, that's crazy.
Two fucking Dolphin fans who had this wild idea to start this, like, news-breaking company on their own. And John Clayton, despite them having no capital whatsoever, John Clayton still sat down and met with them for a few hours because that's just the kind of guy he was. He was very generous with his time and how he helped people.
That's all you can ask for, just a true gentleman.
Oh, man, I'm getting sad again, man. All God right. Damn, man.
Let's steer the ship back from sadness to happiness. So I wanted to talk about the whole sports media stuff because, look, there's Monday night, there's Sunday night. Those broadcast teams are changing. Hell, Fox's new team's going to look completely different. But the one I want to talk about and the one that I'm really excited for is Thursday nights on Amazon Prime, which you'll see these guys during the season. We'll be watching live reacting the games on Prime. But Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit are going to be the official voices for Amazon Prime. And also, too,
that is so random.
It is, but I'm excited for it. And also, I don't know if you saw this, but Kirk Herbstreit also signed a 5-year deal with ESPN to stay on doing College Game Day and then Saturday Night Football. So this man's only going to be calling NFL on Thursdays, Friday going to some random college town, doing Game Day Saturday morning, jumping on a PJ, going to wherever Chris Fowler is, and then doing another game there. So Kirk Herbstreit is just collecting checks for the next, like, foreseeable future.
He's the best dude left at ESPN because all those dudes suck.
Herbie's awesome. Like, I feel so warm and fuzzy when he, like, does an NFL game already. Like, I don't know. It feels special. It feels unique because Herbie, like, in college football, like, the way he would analyze play designs and the way he would talk about, like, the story of the team, you know, and you apply that to the NFL, there's a lot of value there. Like, in college football, like, when Michigan played Notre Dame, like, and this was like 2 years ago, 2019. You know, it was 2019. Michigan played Notre Dame. It was on College Game Day and everything. Michigan won, destroyed Notre Dame. Notre Dame had only one loss entering that game. That loss.
Oh, I remember that game.
Yeah, they lost like 42-10. Yeah. And Herbie like went on this long explanation that like you might think some people at home might just think Michigan's that much better than Notre Dame. That's why they won 42-14. And he was like, nope, that's not what happened. Notre Dame just did not show up today. They did not play their best basketball. They were unmotivated. They came out flat for whatever reason. And they just didn't show up.
I remember that.
Yeah, like, and he was like, just like him, having an analyst that could explain to a casual fan, here's the difference between one team being so much better than the other versus a game where one team just doesn't show up. And it's not that they're 30 points worse. They just did not play their best ball that day. And that was something me as a fan, I couldn't really like differentiate between the two. And he did a good job explaining it. So I'm excited to have him on Thursday nights. It'll make Thursday nights even more fun. And Tirico and Collinsworth on Sunday night are going to be just fine. Whenever Tirico filled in for Al Michaels, he always does an excellent job. The man has a voice destined for sports broadcasting.
Can we just get Collinsworth out of here? Can we just – God, man.
Can I
I'll point out the obvious for 3 hours. Like, I hate.
God, I don't know how big. I don't know how big of a reader you guys are. Do yourself a favor and read this book.
Out of the Pocket.
This is his biography. One of the best books I've read.
It's kind of old, ain't it?
No, it came out last year.
Oh.
Yeah, I got it like for $30. I decided to take a chance. I've gotten back into reading. Sports biographies are a big one. I did there's the Patriots Dynasty book. There's a couple other ones, wrestling ones right now, actually, I got on my table in front of me. The Young Bucks book, I'm reading the Moxley one right now.
Hey, that Moxley book is amazing. Hilarious, man.
Yeah, I'm about, I think, 130 pages.
I read the Young Bucks one. In fact, I'm looking at the Young Bucks one right now. If I get up, y'all see my junkie room, though. But that book's great too.
The other two I want to do is Jay Glazer's book about how to turn anxiety into success. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
I've seen like the cover. I've never read it though.
And then Mike Florio came out with Playmakers about how the NFL truly works. I feel like that's really going to go into deep and really help us understand the game more.
Oh, yeah. Especially like the politics of the NFL, the dynamics of the NFL, how stuff is run in the NFL. Yeah, like, yeah, I've heard Florio's book is good for that.
Exactly. And he's a guy that gets a lot of shit.
Yeah. But I kind of hate
you should do a literature show one day.
I should. I'll just stand here and read. I'll just, like, read a book. I'll go live and I'll read a book. I'll read a book. But
Hey, you guys know a book you should read, though, honestly? That O.J. Simpson book. What if I did it? And that book is amazing, though, man.
Did you it's actually amazing. Read it? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Why? Is it just because he's so delusional?
Because it's like half of it is about his career, and there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. The other half is about the trial, and it's like amazing. Like, he's talking about, they wanted me to say this, and if I would have said it, this would have happened. It's just a lot of that. Oh, man, he's also guilty. Also guilty, by the way.
I still don't have the book on me, but I just have the cover right here, by the way.
Yeah.
For Mox.
I'm behind on the new stuff. Since, you know, I've only been an AEW fan like every 2 months or so. But I when I was younger, like all I would do is read these books at school over and over again. Like all the classics, you know, the Foley's, the Jericho's, Regal's book, like stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, the first Mick Foley book, Have a Nice Day, is my favorite book that doesn't have pictures. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh. And then just want to go back to the broadcasting thing. Fowler and Herbstreet are
football.
My
favorite. Yeah,
football.
Yeah.
Football. Football. Fowler and Herbstreet are my favorite duo for all football, by the way. Nance and Romo are great, but Fowler and Herbstreet, just Fowler is one of those guys too, you know, he just has like, it's his voice and the way he delivers it. It's very passionate, I feel. He's very passionate towards college football.
Yeah, Fowler's great.
Yeah, yep. But with Monday Night Football, how do we feel about Buck and Aikman taking over that?
Oh my God, man. Well, hey, you know what? You know what? I don't have to watch them because I don't watch Monday Night Football. So
Les Dallas, hey, you'll be here podcasting with us so we can have it on a mute in the background.
Like, yo, man, can we be honest, man? They both stink. Can we just be real?
I'll say this.
They also do Les Dallas Cowboys games now.
I think they've gotten a little better over time. Like they're like Aikman in particular. I think when Aikman saw the kind of money that Tony Romo was making as an announcer, I think Aikman like maybe upped his game a little bit. Like when he trashed Jared Goff in the 2020 season when they played the Seahawks and he was just destroying the Rams for every bad throw that Goff made. That was awesome. But yeah, look, they're up and down, but I know Markeem's going to say that's not saying much. It could be an upgrade over the current Monday Night Football team.
You're right. That's not saying much.
y'all know how I feel about Brian Griese. You know how I feel about Brian Griese in that booth.
And he's now a quarterback. He's a quarterback's coach now.
Which is San Francisco, which a lot of people fuel that to Tom Brady potentially going to San Francisco because obviously they played together at Michigan.
Yeah,
I've heard. Imagine learning from Brian Griese about how to be a quarterback. God, your life is just you must. You know what I mean? It's just that's like learning how to, you know, be a welder from like a 3-year-old. You know what I mean? It's just why would you want to learn how to be a quarterback from Brian Griese? Oh man, does it get much worse? Oh my God.
Hey, that's unnecessarily mean. Former Dolphins quarterback Brian Griese.
Then you know what I'm talking about.
Well, of course, but it's still
it's just terrible, man.
Quarterback from Brian Griese.
Hey, can we just? He's just kind of bad at everything. He was bad in the booth. He was bad on the field. He'll probably be bad as a quarterback's coach. We'll see.
Should I call this episode the Welcome to Miami in Spanish, or should I do welding from a 3-year-old? That popped me. I don't know why.
To weld from a 3-year-old.
Like it's just bad.
Yeah, I'm doing that.
He's the Lane Kiffin in every way of the world. No, he's not that bad. He's not.
Oh. Hey man, my team almost fucking hired Lane Kiffin. Thankfully, they got Cristobal instead, but.
Hey, when I saw he interviewed with y'all, I was like, oh man, if this happens.
You know it's coming. He's about to get another high profile job somewhere. You know it's coming.
Of course. 100%.
Do we buy into the Matt Corral hype though for the NFL, or do you think there's someone out there who's gonna be a better quarterback?
For me, I'm worried about his injury history. He's a little slight, like Tua. You know, viewed as like a small quarterback or whatever. Tua weighs 220 pounds. You know, like Bryce Young weighs 190, and Matt Corral is like lighter.
Tua is stocky. That's why people think he's small.
Yeah,
he's not small at all.
Corral, I wonder if Corral can stay healthy. I will say that.
I will always say I wish Tua didn't get hurt. I really do.
Hey, man,
I wish he didn't get hurt, man.
It's not over, Marquis.
Because every time I hear someone say, you know, he's not that good, it hurts a little bit, man. Because I know he's good. I know he is. I know. I saw it. I know he's good.
It's not over. It's not over.
It's over, kids. It's over, man.
What's wrong with you? You don't think his health can improve? You don't think his arm and his mobility could look better?
I think it's just too much, man. Like, you'd be too beat up.
Oh, I have there's something I have right now about from a Miami Dolphins news that just came down the pipe, Big Rap. Do you want to hear it?
Sure.
So Jeff Howe from The Athletic, which, by the way, was a recent – I don't know if you guys saw this. He used to be the Patriots reporter for The Athletic, but now he covers the league nationally, kind of like how Doug Kye had moved from Nesson to do PFF national news. Jeff Howe just stayed with The Athletic. He just kind of got promoted. So before I reported this, I just want to send my best wishes out to him just because he's just cancer. Got cancer. So I just want to send my best wishes to Jeff. I've had a few interactions with him on Twitter.
Oh.
He tweeted about 5 minutes ago, there's nothing happening between Tom Brady and the Dolphins, according to a source. He's been recruiting free agents to the Bucs, which feels relevant here. Carry on. Hashtag at the Athletic. So yeah. I guess because
kid, how would you have felt about that?
Listen, not what you might think, because it is so like chaotic, and I love chaos. Like that concept of him getting announced in Hard Rock Stadium and from Michigan, number 12. Like it'd be funny. It'd objectively funny.
I buy that
insane,
Brady.
Man. That would be insane. That would be insane. Oh my God.
So okay, like
that, what? Oh man.
Yeah, so like Griff, are you gonna reference Bruce Beal? Which is he's the guy that's gonna take over for Steve Ross whenever Steve Ross passes away.
Yes.
To be the owner of the Dolphins. Bruce Beal and Brady are very close. And Brady has a lot of business interests here in Miami. And so the smoke is that the Dolphins are trying to go after Tom Brady. I do not think it will happen this year. Now, if Tua gets hurt again or doesn't play well and they want to move on, I could see that next year if Tom is up for it, if Tom still wants to play. But I don't
think Tom shouldn't be playing this year, but whatever.
He should not be. I think in that Rams game, like I saw Dan Hansis from the NFL Network said there was a moment where like his lip was cut up and he was walking off the field after a three and out. He looked into the sun. His hair looked a little gray. It was like the first time you could kind of think, man, that guy looks a little old, you know? It makes you wonder.
My other thing, too, is that
he's looked old for years, man. It just hasn't mattered. He's looked old for years, man.
And it looked different in that game, in my opinion.
My other take with them is, too, look, I still think losing Alex Kappa and Allen is going to be – no, they were – I'm trying to think that I know they traded for Shaq Mason, which should help. They'll probably draft the other guard to help. But I want to see, and also too, they lost. Who went to the? Was it Carlton Davis that went to the Jets, or was it someone else?
Jordan Whitehead
went to the Jets. With the Bucs, and also too, Gronk hasn't officially come back yet. That's something to note. I feel like he will.
He said today he was his agent Drew Rosenhaus today said he was unsure. He was 50-50.
Drew Rosenhaus does he have like drawers full of money in his house and shit like.
Drew Rosenhaus runs the Dolphins, everybody. Like that's why Tyreek Hill's a Miami Dolphin.
he just gets paid every free agency, I swear to God. It's like him, Scott Boras for baseball. We all know how it works. Yeah. Does this Bruce
Rich
does
Paul. This guy,
what's Rich Paul for the NBA? Which I don't think
Mr. Adele.
Mr. Adele. What was I gonna say?
Isn't that just wacky? Cause it's just wacky, like he's Adele? That's weird. I don't know why that's weird. It's just weird to me. I don't know why.
So my mom would come to me and be like, oh, why Adele at so many Laker games? I'm just like, oh, she's dating Rich Paul, who's basically LeBron James' I'm pretty sure best friend, like, since high school or something like that. Like, Rich Paul just got in his inner circle, and then LeBron recruited him to be his agency, and now Rich Paul, I'm pretty sure, runs Clutch Sports as a whole, which I know there's certain agents that represent the NFL, which I think a couple of them are Patriots players. Going back to the point, the guy, what was it, Bruce Beal, or was it something else?
Bruce Beal, yeah.
Bruce Beal. Is he Michigan as well, or?
Yeah,
he just no time for business. I only ask that because, obviously, look, Stephen Ross, Michigan, Ross School of Business, like you've told me. Brady, Michigan. So it's a Michigan. So it clearly seems like it's a big college connection. That's what I just wanted to ask.
Yeah, and obviously, like, the belief was that when Brian Flores was forced to meet with the quarterback at the end of the 2019 season and he refused to do it on a yacht in secret, the rumor is that was Brady. So, yeah, there's connections there all over. But, like, back on – well, we'll talk about that next year if and when Brady becomes a Miami Dolphin. But on the draft – I was going to ask Markeem because you brought it up. Like I have my issues about Corral, but Markeem, between – like, who has the best chance between, like, Malik Willis, Kenny Pickett, Sam Howell, Desmond Ridder, and Corral? Because I know they all suck. I know that, but – who has the best chance? Is it Willis just because he has the tools, or one of these other guys?
Willis has the biggest tool set coming straight into the league. Like he has the best chance to be good early. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. But like, man, I think all of them are just.
It's Carson Strong.
They're all just projects.
What happened to Howell? Because I know you told me over Twitter you thought he was too inconsistent, but coming out he was supposed to be like the next big thing. Like what? What changed?
I don't know. I don't know. He just started playing worse. I don't know. Like, I don't – like, they all looked really bad at certain points, all of them.
Yeah, I mean, Desmond Ridder had a very, very bad showing against Bama. I know it's awful. Bama.
He was terrible.
Yeah. Like, we all know who the best player coming out of Cincinnati is anyway. We all know it's Sauce. But for if you guys had to pick – even, too, with the first overall pick, remember last year it was Kayvon Thibodeau, and then his stock's just been going down, like, this whole process where, look, Aiden Hutchinson's going to be top three. I still think Evan O'Neal's going to be top three. The one wild card, I like him. I don't know how you guys feel about him, is Ike Ekwonu out of NC State. He's good. He's got a lot of potential. But there's certain fan bases, like it's the Giants, where they're just like, oh, if we don't get Neal or Ekwonu, we don't want to hear it. Like, I feel like for them, Charles Cross is like a consolation prize, which Charles Cross is going to be a great lineman in this league.
And Kyle Hamilton, it's tricky because everyone's iffy about drafting a safety very high. Like, Notre Dame doesn't have a great history. But, you know, if I'm not saying he is this, but if Kyle Hamilton can do what, you know, Derwin James was and, you know, be multidimensional, be all over the field, there's a lot of value in that as like an
– There is, yeah, there is.
You know?
A lot of guys like that don't last long, though. That's the trepidation.
Yeah. Like even Derek Stingley Jr. as well.
Well, yeah, like him, I remember when he was a true freshman, like people thought he would be an absolute stud, but now like Sauce is getting a lot of the hype. And yeah, I guess those guys, the Kyle Hamilton types, the Marquise,
they usually don't last long.
Because I mean, Derwin James has had a ridiculous injury history already, so there is a point to that. Why? Is it just because if you're all over the field, you're just taking so many hits, like in the run game and shit like that?
You're hitting everyone. You're hitting literally everyone. Troy Polamalu, Hall of Famer. And half the time he was on the bench, dirt. I don't know, man. It's just too much wear and tear.
Yeah, one of the greatest safeties of all time. But even still, like with the quarterback class, so I feel like out of even those guys, any of the other guys like Carson Strong, Bailey Zapp, but those guys probably aren't ever going to be true starters, kind of like how Ian Book was this year. Like, we know what Ian Book is. But man, for the most part, it's like we're saying, this is a glue draft. This is a glue draft. And the receivers, look, if you don't get one on day one, don't forget. None of them.
Not a single one, I think, is anything worth talking about.
They're good, but I still feel like the best receiver class in recent memory still was 2020. Obviously, look, we know what happened to Henry Ruggs, but Jerry Jeudy I think Jerry Jeudy can be a really good receiver in this league with the right quarterback. We'll see what he does with Russ. And then obviously you have CeeDee Lamb, which I knew. That's the other thing I want to say. I called this like a year ago that the Cowboys were going to cut or trade Amari Cooper because of cap reasoning with him making $20 million and him being super inconsistent. Shout out Miguel for that one, being a Raiders fan that he is. But with that too, because look, they know the Zeke contract. I think the next one up for them is getting rid of the Zeke contract, because guess who's going to be asking for money next offseason? And that's CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's.
And that's – The receiver, yeah, but the problem with the receiver class is it's deep, but, like, it doesn't have the Jamar Chase, Waddle-level prospect where they, like, need to go in the top 10, especially since that's the problem, like, these years. Like, there's 10 good receivers every year. Like, Terry McLaurin was found in the third round. Like, Amon-Ra St. Brown was found in the fourth round. Like, AJ Brown wasn't even a first-round pick. It's, like, I wonder if it's going to start becoming, like, running back where, yes – receiver is obviously super important to an NFL offense, but when there's 10 guys available every draft that are good, all of a sudden they stop going early, because what's the point? Like, if supply and demand dictates, you can get them later.
Like, the nostalgia of getting a wide receiver one of the drafts going to wear off eventually. Like, it's one of those things where I feel like, yeah, you can go get someone, but I feel like, do you think the illusion of what we've seen in years past, like, you know, the CeeDee Lambs, the Jamar Chases, the Jalen Waddles, how Debo Samuel was an early second-round pick.
Jefferson.
Yeah. I also think – this is another hot take. I also think that the era of dominant wide receiver for, like, a decade is on its way out too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we'll see guys like a Larry Fitzgerald or a Randy Moss. I don't think we'll see guys like that anymore. Remember, Antonio Brown was the closest thing to that. He's not that anymore. You know what I mean?
Beckham, we thought would be that.
He's not that.
No. Oh, can I give another example of, you can draft a receiver late and it can still work out for your team?
Who?
Darnell Mooney. I know he's not exactly a top caliber receiver, but he's the kind of guy you
can
call
him. Yeah, he's solid, though.
He's solid. He's solid. I think that's what you're going to get in this draft with a lot of this receiving class. A lot of solid talent. I feel like Williams and Jameson Williams and John Metchie, there's potential there. I think it's just coming off the torn ACLs. There's going to be a lot of question marks there. That's my big thing with those two.
It also, to Marquise's point also about not being long-term receivers, and I know this sounds weird to me as the Dolphin fan who just gave Tyreek Hill a huge contract, it's a good argument for not giving any of these receivers big money. Like, the DeAndre Hopkins contract is going to look pretty bad pretty soon because, like, even though he's good, it's like, especially someone like
he's
him.
He's not what he was.
He's not. As he's aging, he's not what he was. And someone like him, who only even in his prime, only ran like a 4.59 or whatever, like, you can get a receiver to do what he does. Like, I will argue that Tyreek Hill is different because he changes the entire game plan the defense prepares for you because of his speed. I think that's different than what Adams and Hopkins can offer. So, of course, me, the homer, I'm going to justify why my team is okay doing what they did. But I did think Tyreek Hill was the most valuable receiver in the league. I did genuinely believe that before my team traded for him because it's not just his production. It's how it affects the rest of
the team. Yeah. Closest thing I've seen to like Randy in that sense where he changes the game because of the threat he is deep.
Exactly.
The entire defense changes because of that.
And so someone who doesn't have that ability, when you're talking to Hopkins or even the Adams, it's like, it's
good. Doesn't matter how good he is individually. You can find that. Yeah.
That's the problem. And you can find that with a second round pick. It seems like rookie receivers these days are better than they've ever been. They come in and they instantly have 900-yard seasons like it's nothing.
That is true.
I know he hasn't exactly – I don't know if he's had a 900-yard season, but look at our boy. Pittman was a second-round pick.
Yeah, he had 1,000 yards last year. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, 1,000 yards. Never mind. That completely went over my head.
He was a rookie, but I get you.
Yeah, as a rookie, he was like – but this year he really showed his potential. He really showed what he can be. Yeah. So if –
Metcalf,
Chase Claypool, even though I know Claypool, his rookie year, we don't know what Chase Claypool is going to be this year, which I have a hot take about the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I know they have Mitch Trubisky, but doesn't this team kind of remind you, or I'm just going to say this, if the Pittsburgh Steelers can get average quarterback play, like Trubisky doesn't fuck it up enough, and their defense steals them some games, don't you think this team could potentially find a way to maybe sneak in the playoffs? I know it sounds crazy.
You're right. It does sound crazy.
It sounds crazy enough that it could come true.
No. Look, it's just a big if. Like, if Mitch Trubisky is not fucking it up, okay, sure. But that's what's the guarantee that that's what you're going to get?
Look, man, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I don't think he was that bad when he was in Chicago.
He really didn't.
It's because he was the second pick. He was disproportionately criticized relative to his production.
Yeah.
That is true. That doesn't mean he's a franchise quarterback, though, but yes, I get the point.
I also feel like, too, he doesn't have pressure. Also, too, I like the fact that I think Matt Canada is going to be really good for him to work with, but there's no pressure on him. I think, obviously, Steeler fans are going to think, you know what, make the playoffs, wave your terrible towels, here we go, Steelers, or Black and Yellow, whatever. I don't know what their fight song is. I'm not a Steelers fan. But I just feel like there's not pressure to win. Obviously, it's going to be hard to succeed Big Ben in that Hall of Fame career. But I'm just saying, this team, I think, could win 9 or 10 games if they play, as long as Mitch Trubisky doesn't play awfully.
Boy, Griff. I don't know about that.
They did win 9 last year. They did win 9 last year. I think most people would say Trubisky is an upgrade over the 2021 version of Big Ben. I mean, Markeem thought Matt Ryan was washed. Like, Big Ben, I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, he was washed.
He was like, out of the washer, like, soaked with suds, head to toe, like, full-on washed.
I can't imagine them winning 9 games.
They just did, didn't they? No, they got lucky. Like, they had the
Browns. Yeah, they faced the Ravens when they were hurt, right? Then they faced
Well, the Ravens also went for 2, remember, when they could have tied it up and sent it to overtime?
Yeah.
They don't go 2-0 against the Ravens very often. I know it's happened the last 2 years, but Lamar only played 2 of those 4 games. Like, it's not likely.
And even the other game, too, you can make cases.
Like, you think next year they're going to be better than the Ravens again?
No.
Like, dude, you think it'll be better than the Bengals?
Can I have a hot take about the AFC North?
What?
I think there's a chance the Ravens actually win the division this year if they if they're fully healthy.
Absolutely.
They probably would have won it last year if they were healthy.
They were, before Lamar got hurt, even after that two-point conversion thing, they were first in the division at that point. People forget.
Yeah.
Like what Cincinnati did,
your Dolphins could have
easily been the Ravens last year. Could have easily been the Ravens.
The Dolphins' Thursday night loss was like the start to their downfall for their season.
It was. It was, baby. Of course. And the
Bengals, I remember we were mad about that game.
And we see this all the time. Like, the Rams, like, it seems obvious in hindsight that they didn't make the playoffs the year after they made the Super Bowl and lost, but it happens all the time that the Super Bowl team, like, we just, like, I see it now. A lot of people are just penciling in the Bengals for one or two or three in the AFC. Like, we see this all the time. The Super Bowl team sometimes misses the playoffs outright, much less doesn't even win their own division.
I do think people were kind of overhyping when they did in the playoffs. I thought during the season they were a bit underrated. I thought during the playoffs they were a bit overrated. That makes sense.
It was their defense in the playoffs. Like that should have been the
story. But all they was talking about was Burrow. And Burrow was fine. You know what I mean? But
the defense was getting three interceptions every week. The offense was only scoring like 20 points every game. Like
they held Patrick Mahomes to the worst half of his career.
Yeah. He went on full tilt. Like he was on full
like he was the best he ever was for one half and then the worst he ever was for, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, but all anyone talked about was Burrow.
And then one other note before we wrap up today. I know, Big Rat, you remember my take for this on 2020. Remember when I said that when Marshall Yonder retired, it was going to be a big loss for the Ravens?
Yeah.
2022, so Roger Saffold left the Titans. I think that could be another big hole to fill for the Titans. I know he's your boy, but I just like Matt Ryan better with his situation right now. That's why. Unless the offensive line, we're talking about the Springmark game. If the offensive line for the Dolphins, if not Dolphins, the Colts isn't as good as what it was, and if Ryan Kelly can't stay healthy, it's a different story. But for right now, I think there's a legitimate case that the Colts can win the South.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like we said, they were, in terms of talent, the best team last year.
They
shot themselves in the foot. Remember, they had the game against – well, they went to Arizona on Christmas, beat them. They had the game against the Patriots where they were just the better team by far, and then they lost
the last game of the season, the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I had Jacksonville to cover the spread in that game.
Yeah, you so know, did I.
The Colts have not won in Jacksonville since 2014 or 2013.
I had them – Danny asked me for my picks that week, and I told him the Jaguars, and he said, I fucking hate that pick, bro. And I'm like, shut up. Like, they're going to cover that spread. Just you watch. And I didn't think they'd win outright, but still. Crazy.
That was my best week of NFL betting was week 18. I remember I had a same game for Dallas and Philly that hit. And then on the Sunday, I picked the Vikings to cover their spread, the football team to cover their spread.
My sister was pissed, man.
And the Steelers to cover the spread against the Ravens.
Mad.
All three
mad as hell.
Yeah, you're mad about the Colts blowing in that opportunity. I mean, it blew up the team. Like, the owner was upset. Everyone was mad.
Yeah, like, when Jim Irsay gets upset, you know it's a problem. Like, that's all I got to say. Because Jim Irsay is usually a pretty mild-mannered guy.
Here's a sliding glass doors moment. Colts win that game. They're the five seed, right? They would have been the highest of the wildcard teams if they won that game. They're the five seed. They play the Bengals opening weekend. They might beat the Bengals outright, and that Bengals Super Bowl run never happens.
Good plan.
Very, very possible.
Do we think the Bengals are a team to where
What if that's Carson Wentz that makes that run? We're having a very different conversation. Oh. Very different conversation.
It's like 2017 all over again. And then the other thing I want to say with that, too, is with the Bengals this year, do we see them potentially taking a step back, or do you think they're going to be the same team?
I think they'll be just as good. But I think that the playoff run doesn't happen.
Yeah.
They make the playoffs, but that's it.
I think wild card team not winning the division. I would have the Ravens winning the division. And then, they play like the Bills or something in the playoffs.
And they play well, but they lose. Well,
they lose. And then everyone's like, oh, man, what happened to this team? They were in the Super Bowl last year.
And then the year after, they win the Super Bowl. Yeah. Something like that.
It's like, it doesn't have to be like, it's going to be portrayed as a disappointment, but really it's just, you know, it's a more competitive conference. They caught some breaks last year. Like, it doesn't mean they're doing anything wrong. It just, you know, like the same level is. So when I said worse, I don't mean that they're going to play worse football. I just meant they're not going to have the same success. That's all.
Can't imagine them getting back to the Super Bowl.
No,
crazy.
And yeah, the Titans. Oh, sorry. Hey, I'll let you go because I'm going to start a different thing on the Titans. Go.
The only thing I was going to say too is Big Rat. You brought this up earlier. Mark, you might say this. There's like 9 to 10 teams who can make the playoffs in the AFC. You're going to have some of these big name teams like
disappoint.
Look, someone in the AFC West is not going to have, not all four of them are going to go over 500. They remember, they have to play each other twice.
Yeah.
Someone's going to have a disappointing year. The North, too. Someone's going to have a disappointing. Like every division. The only division that I see not being disappointing is the North. I still say the Packers are going to win. There's a weird voice inside my head saying, don't count on the Vikings, but I'm not going to be listening to that. And then the South and the East and the West, it's pretty much, I think, open season. But you're going to have disappointment. And honestly, I'd rather be a team with no expectations going into this year, like the Patriots are, like your Dolphins are. And I only say that about the Dolphins because, look, how the Tua stuff we talked about earlier. Because when you don't have expectations, and say if you don't go far or you miss the playoffs, you're not disappointed. Like a lot of these fans are. Like how I'm saying, like how I had my take earlier about, and this is the Bills Mafia. If you guys do not win a Super Bowl this year, I don't know if you're going to win one in the near future because of the Josh Allen contract kicking in. That's all I wanted to add.
They better get there. That's all I got to – look, hey, man, if y'all think I can't be annoying sometimes, I'm going to be very annoying if they don't make the Super Bowl.
Annoying. Who's going to cover Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle going down the field when Tua proves you wrong and shows that he could still regain some of the physical strength that he had before the hip injury? Because it's not over, Markeem.
The hip injury. Listen what you say, a hip injury. Who comes back and is just themselves after a hip injury?
Hey, like, isn't it impressive what he has done, given, like, it didn't end his career or anything like
that? That's a good point. But he's not the same guy, man. He's just not.
Okay, but look, I was just arguing about this with my brother outside. People think, oh, the Dolphins' offensive line is bad, so the Bengals' line is bad. A bunch of people have bad lines. What does it matter? The Dolphins' offensive line allowed 50 more pressures than the second worst offensive line in the league. It wasn't just that they were bad. They were on a different tier. They were really like the 35th worst offensive line in the league. And there was like 30 others in the middle. So I hate when people make that argument. It's disingenuous. We were uniquely bad relative to the other bad offensive lines in football. So that is something that they could maybe fix. And the problem, Griff, though, is that the Dolphins, now that they got Tyreek Hill, I think there are going to be some expectations. Not to make a Super Bowl run or anything like that. But I think not making the playoffs – when the Dolphins had a winning record the last 2 years, the only team in the NFL with back-to-back winning seasons and didn't make the playoffs in either year. And part of that is just bad luck. Like, when you go 10-6...
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to think they should make the playoffs now.
Yes, exactly. That's the issue.
I think, too, not starting the season off 1-6 or 1-7, whatever it was, that's going to be another key. Like, so say if you guys have a similar record path in 2022 as you did 2021... It'll look better if the losses and the wins are not like, here's a bunch of losses, here's a bunch of wins, and then obviously there's a choke job again, and then you guys just laid an egg against the Titans, and then you beat us in Week 18.
Hey, man, I want the Dolphins to be good, man. I want them to be good.
I feel like everyone but Danny wants them to be good.
Yeah, Danny. And Danny's.
I want the Jets to be good. I want, you know what I mean?
I don't want the Jets to be good.
I do not want the Jets to be good. Poverty franchise. They have not been good since – for the record, the Jets have not been good since 1969.
I think Markeem he wants Tua to be special, and he's sad that the hip injury means he's not going to be special anymore. But my argument is, can he just be a better version of Jimmy G? Can he be a better version, not that, a better version of that? Like, that's probably good enough to win you a Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, that's not hard. I mean,
and so
I guess he could. I mean, it's not saying much, man. I mean,
was McDaniel with the Niners when they went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago?
Yeah, he's been with Shanahan for like 15 years. Like everywhere,
okay.
When Shanahan was in Washington, when Shanahan was with Atlanta, like all those things.
So he
has a lot of experience with them, and Tyreek Hill makes them dangerous. So we'll see.
I can see him being used also like what they used Deebo Samuel in last year.
Yeah, and Tyreek kind of hinted at that today, and then. in my opinion, I think what a lot of the coverage is overlooking is that with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, so much speed, there's probably going to face a lot of cover two looks, two high safeties. Everyone's terrified of that speed, right? Well, now Mike McDaniel is going to do that run game with the Niners offensive system, you know, with Raheem Mostert and Chase Edmonds. And now there's going to be no safeties in the box because everyone is so terrified of the speed on the outside, they have to keep their safeties back. And I think the run game is what's going to surprise people. It's not that there's going to be a ton of bombs down the field. I think the run game is just going to go like for 5 yards a carry. And I think that's what's going to make the Dolphins special.
Yeah, and then also, too, the one other point I want to make.
I hope you're right, kid. I hope you're right. I ain't going to lie.
I'm not saying they'll win the Super Bowl. Just I think they can be better than Griff's Patriots. We've kind of danced around that. But, we, you know, they've kind of – Dolphins beat the Patriots twice last year, and the Patriots lost some guys while the Dolphins seemingly are getting better. Seems like the Patriots are either staying the same or getting a little bit worse. We'll say staying the same, to be fair. So I think, yeah, the hope is there. And then the only thing I'll say about the – I just want to get my Titans point out of the way because it's related to the Dolphins, Tannehill. Don't be surprised if the Titans take a quarterback in the first round because this is the perfect kind of draft for it, right? All these quarterbacks start falling down the boards. The Titans are that team in the 20s, like can kind of do what the Packers do with Jordan Love. They take a quarterback in the first round, and then Tannehill has the best year of his career because that's what happens. The Chiefs took Patrick Mahomes, career year for Alex Smith. The Packers took Jordan Love, back-to-back MVP seasons for Aaron Rodgers. Some New England people say Tom Brady elevated his game after they took Jimmy G. I remember the criticism Brady was getting in 2013 and then 2014.
Yeah, this is his heir apparent. Jimmy G, I was one of those people. I'm not going to lie, I was one of those people.
He just won three Super Bowls after that.
You draft Tannehill's replacement. It motivates Tannehill. You get the best year of Tannehill's career.
I think Look at Aaron Rodgers, back-to-back MVPs.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that will we see actually Bill Belichick letting Mac Jones play football? Is this the year we let, you know what I mean? Will he do it? Or will he wait another year and then the third year you can play football now?
If they make Mac Jones play, I'll say this right now with the Patriots. Look, if they make Mac Jones play what they did last year where they really restricted a lot of the stuff that he could do and make him a product of the system, there's none of that. I think you need to see Mac Jones on his own improve. He's
coming out like we got to know. We got to know if he can play or not. We got to know.
We got to know. Mac will be one of those guys where I don't think he'll ever be, you know, top five quarterback in the league. Yeah. I think he could be, you know, what Derek Carr is right now. You know that, like, middle 10 to 16 ranked
I thought he was unfairly criticized last year.
I think he was, too. I didn't have any problems with his games. I know, look, I think a lot of what happened in that Buffalo game was a lot of people thinking, oh, great, this is just, you know, he's mid for all you Gen Zers out there. He's not really – he's nothing more than average. I think he has a chance to succeed. I think Belichick eventually is going to give him, not say giving him the keys of the kingdom fully, but I feel like there is chances for them to succeed. Plus two, I think last year was an overachievement year. Look, they went to the playoffs with what they spent their money on, with a rookie quarterback, and people are saying just because we lost a couple of pieces here and there that were somehow going to be worse, that may be the case. But I'm still here saying the case that, look, this team was still in the playoffs with basically the bottom of the barrel receiving core and Cam Newton at quarterback. They were in the playoff hunt until week 15. You know because why? Of Belichick.
Because Bill Belichick is the greatest NFL coach of all time. That's why. Yeah, and I'm tired. I'm tired because of Tom Brady. No disrespect to Tom Brady, but is the greatest NFL coach of all time.
Disrespect Tom Brady. Tom Brady went to a fucking loaded team in Tampa Bay, a team arguably even more loaded than some of the Patriots teams he was on, that had a stacked defense that led the NFL in passing offense in 2018 and 2019. Before he got there, led the NFL in passing yards, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and had a stacked defense. That was a loaded, loaded roster. He did
literally not needed a quarterback.
Yeah, he did not transform a bad team into a Super Bowl team by his mere essence. No, he went to a
You basically gave him the keys to a brand new sports car. You didn't expect him to go 100 miles an hour. That's what it was.
Yes.
Oh, man. That's said his essence.
You're right, though. Yeah. You're right.
All right. So, yeah, Belichick deserves that. Like, my fear as an aspiring Dolphin fan who wants them to make the playoffs this year, even though Tua has kind of owned Belichick a little bit since he's been in the NFL. Can't take that away from him, Markeem. That's the one thing he has over Herbert. Every time Herbert plays that Patriots defense, he falls apart. He throws pick sixes. He looks god awful. When Tua plays the Patriots defense, he looks okay.
Okay, one time out of the year, kid.
Two times.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Two times out of the year.
Oh, see, Tua's undefeated, I'm pretty sure, against the Patriots and the New York Jets, but somehow hasn't beaten the Bills yet. But we all know Josh Allen, for some reason, is just on another level when he plays you guys. But Justin Herbert's – can I say something about Justin Herbert quickly with that? His two worst career starts have been against New England.
Yes, they have been.
Both of those starts, including the rumor. In the year with Cam Newton, we beat them 45 to nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know they were the Anthony. That was the Anthony Lynn team, who somehow is now the OC in San Francisco. We'll see how that goes. But that's just the one point I wanted to make. Where as long as Belichick is coaching this football team, do not count them out of being in that playoff mix. That's all I'm gonna say.
They have a high floor. That's the scary thing about them. It's like they're never gonna go 4-12. It's like
they always have
a high floor.
The Duke Blue Devils last like 7 possessions. They just showed it on the screen. 4 of those were turnovers.
Oh boy.
Good thing I'm talking to you guys instead of watching this game. But you know, whatever.
No comment. But
it's money.
Fine. I've been nice cold since last Thursday. But no, for the most part, the conversations like this are why I love watching the NFL, because we get to have all these crazy conversations about things we think that are gonna happen in 5 months from now, when the complete opposite of what we expect is going to happen. And then the other thing, too, is before we wrap up here.
You know, it's been always before have to expect- we wrap up for like 17 minutes.
Oh, believe me.
We're wrapping up. I got to go.
I'm wrapping up now. I always like the 2 hours is like where I like to keep the threshold, except for if there's certain episodes. But with the NFL season, we always have to remember these two things. There's always going to be a team that catches people off guard, like Cincinnati last year. And there's always going to be a team like Cleveland who disappoint a lot of people. That's the one thing we have to remember about the NFL that happens every single year.
That is true.
There will be a team that is pegged as a Super Bowl contender that will have a losing record. Happens every year.
Yeah, happens every time. That's
it's going to be someone in the AFC West. It's going to be someone in the AFC West. I'm calling it right now.
Oh, you mean the Chiefs? Oh, I'm sorry.
More teams take that they're going to go 500. I think they'll take
They're going to hover around 500.
Jeez, there's a stat that Patrick Mahomes has never lost to the Denver Broncos. He has lost to the Chargers, but he's never lost to the Broncos. So
okay, well that's going to change this year.
I'm pretty sure one of his first crazy SportsCenter throws came against the, and that's still the same thing I have to say. I want to see how he does this year with Travis Kelce as his main option, because we all know Juju Smith-Schuster. We certainly know as hell it's not going to be MVS is going to be his main option. So I gotta figure out how.
Yeah,
he's gonna do this.
Let's see how Gronkowski does this year. Jesus Christ! What the hell, man! What is wrong with you people, man?
I thought Marquis was gonna have a heart attack when I said that earlier. That people,
I've never heard that before. Like people actually believe that dumb shit.
Dude, you go down some dark rabbit holes on Twitter. You can find all kind of weird ass takes.
Chiefs. You know, it seems like they're not gonna bring back Honey Badger, even though they got Justin Reed.
Yeah.
And they lost Tre'Davious Ward too, and losing Tyreek Hill. That's a lot.
To around 500. They're going to hover around 500.
I don't know. Maybe it's like I just have so much faith in Mahomes and Reed. It's like I can't see myself not putting them as a playoff team. I could maybe talk myself into them not winning the division. I need some time, but I think I can get there. But
no, hold on. I didn't say they wouldn't make the playoffs. I just said they hover around 500.
You think they'll be like a they'll be like a wild card team and they'll lose in the wild card round? Is that what you're thinking?
I mean, I could see it. Absolutely.
I just think they need a few years. Also, remember Big Rat, Andy Reid only makes a Super Bowl when the game's in Florida. Remember that?
Yep, that's true. Look
it up. Look it up. The one with the Eagles in Jacksonville. The two with the Chiefs, Miami, Tampa Bay. So until the Super Bowl goes back to Florida, which at the earliest is going to be his 2026.
And – to Marquis's point about Tyreek Hill, I do think that hurts. Like, obviously, I'm biased.
That's huge, man.
I do think that you can't just replace him with Jameson Williams and think everything's going to be okay. Like, I don't think it's that simple.
Like, they have to fundamentally change their entire identity now. He literally made them like the greatest show on turf. You know what I mean? And like now he's gone. Like now you have to be the Patriots, I guess. Tight end heavy. You know what I mean?
Can I go back to one of the other teams quickly with injuries? And I just want to go back to Buffalo quickly. One position. As we wrap it, I know. I just want to make one more point on them. How is a guy like I'll save it for a later episode. But I want to see how Tre'Davious White comes back from his torn ACL as well.
And they lost Levi Wallace, the other cornerback on the other side.
Which is also not small.
Yeah.
But I don't give a damn. I'm not cutting them no slack, no. Y'all better make the Super Bowl.
No, because the Dolphins are going to win the division. And
do you think McDermott could potentially get fired if they don't go to the Super Bowl?
No. Hey, you can't fire him. No, he's bulletproof.
Okay, well, we'll see. If they go like 6-11, you could maybe fire him. Like, it'd be tough.
I don't think that's gonna happen though.
Well, they think Josh Allen's the second coming of Jesus Christ there.
Well, yeah, because look, Allen was incredible in that divisional round game. The problem is, people act like he's that quarterback every week. The guy threw for 6.8 yards per attempt last year, lower than Tua Tagovailoa. Like, let's slow down a little bit. I don't think he's automatically the best or second best quarterback in football just because of that game with Mahomes, where they both looked incredible. I think he's got to be a little more consistent than that. But
hate Josh Allen.
Losing Brian Daboll is not a small thing. And you know who his replacement is? My guy, Ken Dorsey.
But yep. Still,
like, there's untested waters there. Like, you still have to see how the offensive coordinator thing goes. He threw for 6.8 yards per attempt last year. That's bad. That's objectively bad.
That is bad.
And we act like the quarterback he was in that Chiefs game is like, that's who he is every week. He's not. He was great to close the season. Like the last 5 weeks of the year, he was
untouchable. He was incredible. Yeah.
Yes, I agree. And
he was really bad in spots though during the year. Like spurts. It was like a consecutive series of weeks where he was just really bad.
And I remember that Colts game when they got their asses kicked?
Yeah, it's terrible.
They lost to the Jaguars. I know my team did as well, but my team scored more than 6 points. Yes.
And we put 50 up on Jacksonville. I don't know how that happened.
So, because Mac Jones played better against the Jaguars than Josh Allen did. That is objectively true.
Josh Allen beat Josh Allen on that day. Yes. But anyway, folks, now it's official. We're doing it, wrapping it up.
Mark, I don't know what the example would be, but this is because it was kind of the theme of the podcast. It's a good thing to close on. Like, if the Bills don't win or don't make the Super Bowl, they could go down as like the Dan Fouts Chargers, or you know,
the Philip Rivers Chargers, the 06 Chargers,
the 98 Vikings, like you know, those era of teams.
I like this.
That seemingly deserved a title, and not only never won a title, but never even got there. Because at least like. The Jim Harbaugh 49ers is another example, but they at least
got there.
So you don't want they could be remembered as that team that like was deserving, was good enough, but like just never quite put it together. So that's all. Now we can wrap it up.
That's a very fair take.
I like that. That was good.
Yeah, baby.
Would you even say like the mid 2000s Chargers as well with like, you know, LT, Gates?
Oh, absolutely. They're in that mix too. Absolutely.
The 06 team that went 14-2 that your Patriots beat on the road. What was it? What's the guy's name? Marlon McCree or the guy who caught classic Tom Brady throws an interception. And the Chargers guy fumbles it back to the Patriots and gives them a first down as a result.
Yeah, luckiest man on earth.
Absolutely.
Oh, but guys, this has been a great conversation today. Thank you all for staying with us for this long. Episode number 160 in the bag. We'll be back next week. More YWC football talk, more draft coverage coming up. These guys will be back on before the draft. Bang. As always, guys, for your odds, shop on the BetStamp app. Have a good night, everybody. We'll see you later.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all had.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.